Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 113. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back, though, Dave.
I was going to say, you're back, man.
Oh, man.
I was writing off last week. I said to the listeners, Stu may be dead, may be gone.
Once again, over-exaggerating, but
I compared
it wasn't pretty.
By the way, have you listened to the full solo show yet that I did last week?
If I say yes, will you stop talking about it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do a few classics from it. Hour and a half of me monologuing. No breaks.
Yeah.
Not a single break. Not a single edit the whole show.
This sounds like the movie with just Beast in it.
No sidekicks.
Yeah, no thank you. No thank you. That's...
I said you were like Luke Skywalker, Empire Strikes Back, when that big woolly guy attacks him at the start and you wind up in the Bacta tank. And, you know, that's what I was saying. She's probably in the Bacta tank right now compared to Professor X.
I mean, at this time last week, I was just dead to the world. I was asleep.
Wow,
I was sleeping through it.
Jeepers
Creepers. But I put in a bit of time during the day, recorded a bit sent it through.
Well, you gave us an investor call about the Avengers box office figure, Stu. That went to a level of detail that I don't think anyone outside Bob Iger needs, personally. But
Yeah, they need it. And Bob wants it. Bob's hungry for it.
Are you reporting to Bob now? Is that the reporting line after that report?
I feel like he should be reporting to me at this stage. I feel like it's the other way around now.
Bob, I'm always here to be your lackey. I don't mind. I'll run copies, Bob.
Boot licking, yeah.
Yeah, I worship the mouse. Someone described the planet as a giant mouse trap operated by a mouse. I thought that was a funny comment, actually.
it did. Also, they kind of penny dropped with a lot of people this week in that now that Disney took over Fox. And because of the success of Endgame,
yeah,
they've now got the top five grossing movies of all time. If you look at that top five list, they're all Disney.
These people should be listening to the Signal.
It's all Disney IP.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for 12 months.
Yeah, I know, but people just seem to start clicking over now. They're like, oh,
well,
they own Avatar now, don't they? And they own Titanic as well.
All the people that their only concern with this deal was about fucking the Fantastic Four and X-Men are suddenly waking up to a world where a massive amount of IP is owned by one company.
Yeah, including Avatar, which is still going and making a lot of money.
Exactly, and we've got more news on it this week. Now, this week, Stu, what were you doing outside of recovering? You've shaved the beard off. Wow, wait, was that a big decision, Stu? The beard line.
Because that was a couple of weeks ago.
Stu had a Paul McCartney letter B beard, which I was kind of envious of.
You're talking about this on the show. I mean, that's got to be at least 3 weeks old now.
Oh, man, who knows, dude? I mean,
you're struggling. Yeah.
Not struggling, but like what happened was, man, I just retreated to the studio kind of Brian Wilson style when I went solo. And was just kind of like, you know, putting sand on the ground and stuff, mirroring the beach. I was lost in my world, man. Big time.
I'm picturing like a Howard Hughes scenario.
Yeah, it was close. Yeah, very close. Very accurate.
You're starting to bottle things that shouldn't be bottled.
Shadowboxing in the mirror, talking to myself, seats of Taxi Driver playing.
Yeah, I believe most of that, yeah.
For me, I've been watching Planet of the Apes movies, not the new movies, the Charlton Heston original. Went back to it. I mean, it still holds.
Seems like a productive use of time. Sure.
I mean, I had the Blu-rays and I was just sitting here and I was like, what am I doing just sitting here kind of thinking great thoughts? Why don't I watch Planet of the Apes, the original? I always like to mention. I tried to float it to Michelle. And
it's not like there's other TV shows or movies that you haven't seen.
I've seen just about everything now.
You've seen everything. Everything the humans have ever released is now
feels like it.
It's been watched in catalogue.
It feels like the Riddler of Batman Forever. I went back to... Have you ever heard of these comics, dude? EC Comics. They had like horror and... horror comics, pirate comics, kind of stuff from the Golden Age that was before the censorship laws. And I actually ordered one called War Against Crime and Tales from the Crypt.
Okay. I've heard of Tales of Crypt.
Classic collected them pretty cheaply on Amazon. And I picked up Mortal Kombat 11 as well, just to wrap up my week.
just in case you had more spare time to plunge into something.
Well, so far I've had exactly probably 20 minutes that I played last night, and I'm still just as bad as I was in the mid-90s, but I'm one of those guys who's just hooked to the franchise. I never seem to improve.
Problem is you're like 100% less stoned right now than you were in the, when you're in the 20s.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's that could be an issue here.
Some of the wins I pulled off with Nightwolf, I don't know how I did it, but all he had was the fucking flaming axes. Everyone else had... People are saying you should pick someone with more special powers. No, I like Nightwolf. I like to play Stoner's Nightwolf. I had a lot of issues back in those mid-90s. Stretch there.
Some would say you still have a couple of issues.
Different issues, though. Stuart.
Different issues, yeah.
I want to do some congratulations. And the computer, Crouch, and his wife have just welcomed their first child into the world.
Congratulations. Yeah, that's fantastic news.
What am I saying? Thank you. Congratulations is what I should be saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, is he secretly Prince Harry? Is that what's happened to you?
Out of the computer.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I mean, he's a young
like
guy.
Like an alter
beautiful girl, you know. I mean,
secret identity. He's actually royalty.
Yeah. Well, if so, welcome, Prince Harry. It was a pleasure to have you on the signal.
Yeah,
you provided a lot of data over the course of the signal, outside of your duties as a prince, whatever they are.
Princely duties, yeah.
Princely duties. I've always said to myself, would I want to be part of that royal family? And the answer is no. It's just
The answer is easily yes.
Yeah, it's all that charity work would just grind me down.
When you've got that much money,
money's not an issue.
Money's not an issue.
Yeah, true. True.
So, yeah, I'd take that. I'd be the black sheep of the family.
Yeah.
I'd be the guy that, robs the palace. And
the Prince Andrew, perhaps.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
The playboy.
I'd go with that.
Yeah. No responsibility.
Yeah,
no.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's what you want.
Give me, fourth in line of the throne. Something within reach, but never going to get
quickly there. Becomes not within reach when the others start having kids.
Exactly right.
And then you're great.
You can kick back, relax.
Yeah,
Now,
shout out to Ray. I don't know if you knew about this, Stu. Someone ran over his foot in a car park at work.
Telling me. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. What the fuck's going on? This is what I'm starting to call the Punisher on the streets. Someone ran over his foot. Can you imagine if that happened to me? I'd still be whining about it.
You're whining about it and it hasn't even happened to you.
I know, but when Ray told me, he was it was almost nonchalant from Ray. And I was what the hell happened? And he goes, it's not broken, Dave. And I'm my heart is.
I didn't know you were this attached to Ray's feet.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Ray.
Is this a new fetish that you've developed?
No. It just felt
turning into a foot guy.
He's just a member of the collective. You know, I give big shout-outs to the collective during my solo show because at one point I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I just started advertising.
Yeah, and, sounds right, yeah.
And, but everyone knows I consider Ray almost part of the family. Yeah, someone's gone after him. Was it a hit? That's what I'm putting out there. Is it a conspiracy? Well, apparently
was
the guy's
it a
very
hit?
Apologetic. Yeah, a hit attempt, trying to take him out.
Was it a hit?
Just putting the questions out there, Stu.
I think you've lost it in this week that I've got. You've gone down too many rabbit holes and you've gone dark side. Something's gone wrong.
Okay, well, the investigation continues as far as I'm concerned. Case not closed. Okay, now...
What case? Case never opened. What are you on about?
You've got more information about Avengers Endgame. Would you like to take us through it? I mean, I know that you are... After last week, I'm almost retired from listening to numbers after your 25-minute presentation. Were there slides? It felt like there should have been.
I can put slides. If people want slides, email us. We can get some slides going.
Please.
I can get some Excel spreadsheets.
Just brother, mother, you can talk
we can
to
get
me.
Some graphs and spreadsheets going. We can.
Offline. Let's keep it off the signal.
Yeah,
Stu, apparently it's now officially past Titanic to become the second biggest movie of all time worldwide, which...
Yeah, after last weekend, it's now sitting comfortably in number two.
That's very impressive.
That's very impressive.
I mean, I remember Titanic well being in theatres. It was an extraordinary number itself, but it was in theatres for a long, long time to get to that number.
But the fact that it's still at number two after all these years is seriously impressive.
Hmm. Oh, that was a movie that changed a sort of generation. So it was a landmark.
But I mean, looking at how it's moving forward after that first week,
sure.
The drops that we've seen day to day and comparing Monday to Monday are actually consistent with what we've seen from other Marvel movies. So it's tracking to do the same kind of numbers in terms of percentages that the previous Marvel movies have done.
So
the
what
same
number
kind of
is your little calculator worked out or finish up at? Have you got a number that you think it's
Put it this way, if it keeps going and there's no problems... And there are a potential couple of problems coming.
What if the comet hits the world and it's over?
Well, it's things like what if movies like Detective Pikachu, John Wick, Chapter 3...
I don't think they're going to be too big a problem, are they? John Wick, Chapter 3, no.
No, but if they somehow, you know, do phenomenal numbers...
Yeah, okay.
That could kind of derail it a little
bit. What is Pikachu's expectations? I mean, it's a huge franchise.
That's the thing. We don't really... No, it's up and down.
I think John Wick 3 will come and go fast. I thought John Wick 2 was not a very good movie at all. I think John Wick 1 was excellent.
No, but I think it's kind of hitting the other demographic that Pikachu doesn't.
Gotcha.
Detective Pikachu's going for the younger audience. Yeah. John Wick 3 is hitting the older.
Very global as well, Detective Pikachu.
Exactly. But you combine the two and it's covering the demographics that Endgame is targeting.
So have you got a number? Like, do you think it'll hit past...
Put it this way. If it continues with no problems and it keeps doing what the other Marvel movies have done, it should hit number one of all time.
Wow.
And by a little bit.
And don't forget, Avatar's numbers, really high numbers, were also driven by the fact it was primarily a 3D movie with high ticket prices. That was an impacting factor on it being so far out in front, you know?
Yeah, it was. But it was also... popular in a time when the Chinese market was very different.
Mm.
We're now seeing that the Chinese market's making up a much larger percentage, but they tend to be a heavily front-loaded market. So they'll see a movie incessantly for a week or 2 weeks and then almost not at all.
So it's got a short theatre run, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these kind of things, like, things have changed since Avatar's been out.
Yeah, it's been a good 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much 10 or 11 years.
It's crazy how long it's been without a sequel so far. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah. But look, at this point, Endgame is tracking to be world number one. And by a smallish margin when you get up there, like 50 to 100 million, which when you're talking billions isn't that
much.
I think
episode 9 will do very well, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere close to these numbers.
No, neither do I.
No. I think it'll do well, don't get me wrong.
It will hit a billion.
Yeah, it'll be a good...
But I don't think it'll make the 1.5 billion, let alone the 2 club,
Endgame, it's almost a perfect storm. Infinity War set the table for it. Everything was tracking upwards. It had Captain Marvel. It's hooked a whole generation.
It had 11 years of goodwill going behind it. It had no competition.
Yeah.
You look at the second week out and there was nothing to compete.
You know what I'd like to do, Stu? Maybe for the next show, we do a sort of presentation. Because someone made the point on Collider that not every Marvel movie has been like a $1 billion movie. I mean,
plenty of movies. Oh, no, far from it.
Yeah, which your Incredible Hulks, Ant-Man's, they all made money, original Thor. Doing a sort of a flow chart on how each one of them did when they released. You know, so Incredible Hulk took, like, 238, you know, just so we could spot the rises and lows of that.
I mean, put it this way, they have progressively risen.
Mm.
Part of that is inflation. Like, you know, the first one came out 10 years ago, so there is a difference in the dollar.
Yeah.
But they all have done better than the previous generation on average.
Well, but, like, Incredible Hulk and Thor didn't take the numbers that Iron Man 1 took, for example, you know?
No, but if you look at... Thor 1 compared to Thor 2 compared to Thor 3, they opened progressively bigger.
Oh, I see. You're talking about the
And you kind of look at, like, Phase 1 movies did less than Phase 2 movies,
and
did less
sure
than Phase 3.
Ant-Man 2 took more than, like, your Thor 1s and Incredible Hulks and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the lowest-ranked movie from each phase did progressively better as the phases got on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of the trends you expected to see.
But then when you get everyone in it, like...
Because you kind of look at, like, goodwill is adding as these movies went along. They didn't have any massive failures. They had a couple of... okay movies.
Now, I've got
that was the
you,
worst.
CBR desperately chasing the PC dollar the other day put out this and they go, here's the future of the MCU. Are you happy? And it was like all these fucking C-listers plus Spidey. And I and Corey wrote, no. Like, are you looking for this? No. And I said, not really. Like, it was like C-lister, 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 Doctor Strange, C-lister, Spidey up the back. And I was like, no, I'm not particularly excited to see all these people. And it was called New Avengers. And I was like...
Yeah, look, really? they're pushing towards a New Avengers, Young Avengers kind of slant now.
I'd be more interested in Young Avengers.
Well, they've got the pieces set up for Young Avengers.
Okay.
Now that they've got the young Stark kid.
Is there a young Hulk? There is, isn't there?
Well, I mean, the Hulkling is a character.
What is it called?
Hulkling.
They're not very good with
which
cars,
is kind of the younger okay. Hulk,
is it,
who's a...
Like a clone or something, or...?
No, he's actually a Skrull.
Okay. All right. Well, you know who they could have? She-Hulk. And make She-Hulk young, for example. Just putting an idea out there.
Oh, yeah, you could do, like, a much younger cousin.
Yeah, exactly.
Of Banner or a niece or something.
I think She-Hulk's a great character.
You could do a niece that has the blood transfusion and keep the origin pretty similar. But, I mean, Marvel did incredibly well with characters that weren't A-grade.
Exactly.
When Iron Man first came out, Iron Man wasn't an A-grade character.
Exactly. Iron Man, by the 90s, 2000s, he was probably a C-lister.
Exactly. You know, really. And now we're looking at them going, they're all C-listers, but...
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel has done a lot with C-listers in the
past.
They
have, but I'm really looking forward to them getting the X-Men going. And
exactly right. They've now got X-Men and Fantastic Four, which are always have always been A-list.
Now, do you want me to jump forward to something, Stu, so we can probably bring this into the conversation, the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer?
Yeah, we got the full trailer.
Yeah, we had this later in the show, but I'll bring it up because it impacts on some stuff I want to talk about. So the trailer came out.
My I mean, I suppose we should preference all of this by saying that they started that trailer... It's the first time I've ever seen with a spoiler warning.
Well, there's no more spoiler warnings on this show. We've done a lot of spoiler warnings. Like, kids,
no, like we've said that. We said it when it came out. Yeah. You get a week.
Oh,
you've had two.
I'm doing Eric and Jimmy on the Galaxy now. There's no more spoiler warnings, kids, until the next fucking Avengers movie. Like, as far as I'm concerned, it's all
no. Everybody gets a week or two if you. Yeah.
Seriously. That said, I did see that, and I was like, okay, he's doing that for the kids, you know. I guess.
Look, yes and no. I think a lot of people can stumble across trailers for something that's not Avengers if they're intentionally trying to stop seeing Avengers spoilers.
Sure. Okay.
But yeah, they started with Tom Holland kind of saying, spoiler alert for shit that happens in Endgame. And I was like, okay, so they're properly just letting it go now.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, this trailer is heavy with Endgame spoilers.
Well, yes, it's all about, I mean, the loss of Tony is all throughout it.
And it's exactly what I said in the review. That is his Uncle Ben moment. This Very is true. The death in the family that affects Spider-Man.
Very true. Very true.
And pushes this responsibility line.
We had other things I noticed. We obviously had Mysterio, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, mentioning about multiverse. And that's something that a lot of people are talking about. And that was a big feature of this. And Nick Fury actually said that it was caused by the snap, wasn't it? Didn't Nick Fury say the snap?
Well, yeah. They opened up a bunch of alternate timelines.
Yeah.
And while in the movie they said they were going to go back in time, drop the stones back, there were obviously things like when Loki disappeared.
Yes.
That's not what we remember happening.
Yeah.
Which means that is an alternate timeline.
And I mentioned this on my solo show. The Russo brothers did in fact say that when Cap went back, it opened up alternate areas that they will explore in later movies, like Marvel will explore.
I mean, the other thing is old Cap.
Yes.
Obviously had to travel from one timeline to their timeline.
Well, there was a lot of speculation. Yeah, there was a lot of speculation. They apparently confirmed that he had been in an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, so look, they did open up a couple of branches of new timelines.
Which is cool. I like the idea.
But this just feels like the perfect opportunity for them to be able to introduce a whole race of mutants. From another reality.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got the Fantastic Four, who are known for creating Voyages. And jumping through different realities.
They're
so,
literally adventurers, imagineers, whatever you call them.
Like, it's the perfect kind of foil to bring in the Fantastic Four first off. And then to kind of introduce a whole other reality with an Earth 2.
Bring it on.
Including...
Earth X-Man with the fucking X-Men, dude. Bring it on.
Including the X-Men.
I can't wait to see a new Wolverine. Like, much as I love Hugh Jackman, like, to them get Wolverine and the X-Men going again, Marvel-style, done well, I'm so fucking pumped for that.
I mean, having said all that, I don't think we're going to get any of that in Spider-Man.
No.
I think that's absolutely a red herring entirely.
No. Yeah.
Like, well, Mysterio says he's from an alternate reality. He's just playing the fool.
Yes, that was my next question. We know Mysterio is, in general, a villain, and we know that he's a liar. Like, he's a con man, basically. That's his whole thing. He's a grifter. Now, so...
I mean, in the comics, he's a special effects stunt
illusionist. Yeah.
And that's basically what he's doing here. He's pulling the wool over people's eyes to make him look like a hero.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that there aren't multiple realities. It just probably means he's probably not from one of them or something, or... You know,
yeah, look, I think they're just dropping that as a kind of Easter egg to say it's coming, but...
Yeah. Oh, we're not going to see Wolverine and Spider-Man Far From Home. No way.
I don't know, but I mean, they're not going to actually show Mysterio coming to or going from another Earth.
Do you think he could be from another Earth and just a con man? Anyway? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no. See, I don't think they're going to...
You think he's just from this earth and he's just playing...
I think this movie's kind of going to wrap up with, like, Spider-Man talking to Fury and saying, oh, so there weren't any other realities? And Fury goes, no, there's nothing else. And then you kind of get a...
You don't,
then you get the Easter egg of there actually is something else. There's a twist that the characters
don't
think
we'll see alternate versions of Spider-Man, like from Spider-Verse kind of style live action as a potential?
Long term, yes, but not Far From Home.
One thing I didn't like about this trailer, I love this trailer in general. I thought it did the same thing that Spider-Man Homecoming did. It showed you too much plot and too much action, and I felt too many climactic moments inside the trailer. And Spider-Man Homecoming trailer did it as well. I just feel they reveal way too much inside the Spider-Man trailer.
Homecoming did it, but Homecoming was a paint-by-numbers story. You knew who the villain was immediately.
Sure.
He was painted to be the villain. I think this one at least is...
swerving.
Look, it's obvious enough that there's a twist coming to comic book fans.
Mm.
But I think to the general public, this does kind of look like a hero team-up.
Mm-hmm.
After the success of Ragnarok, people are calling out for
sure.
buddy cop hero movies.
Great movie.
And it kind of feels like this could be one of them if you haven't read any books.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, I'm very much... When is it coming out, Stu? Do we have...
Mid-July.
So it's not far away.
Not far away at all.
Okay.
2 months.
All right. Now, I'm really looking forward to it, for sure. Now, we had some big news coming from Disney as well. Variety reports Disney have announced 3 new untitled Star Wars movies will be hitting theatres. The first one will be hitting theatres in 2022. There will be 2 other follow-ups in 2024 and 26. A lot of speculation that it's Rian Johnson's Star Wars trilogy, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few options for what they could be.
Mm.
But Star Wars have traditionally released trilogies mm-hmm. with 2-year gaps.
Yeah, and there's also speculation that there's more movies coming as well from the Game of Thrones guys. In fact, there was a lot of talk on Collider that there's actually more movies than that are going to be dropping.
Exactly right. And this could be Dan and Dave from Game of Thrones.
Well, yeah, we know that's coming. It's in development. So
yeah, but I mean, it could be them as opposed to Rian Johnson.
I hope it is, frankly. I'm not feeling Rian Johnson. I don't feel like... It's not that I feel like... I like Lupin, don't get me wrong, and I like Brick, but I'd rather the Game of Thrones guys, frankly, than Rian Johnson for some reason. I just feel like...
Right now, I think they're probably a more talented duo than he is.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. I think in the right universe with the right characters, they
sure.
both sets of trilogies have the potential to be
definitely
astoundingly definitely. Good.
I think the less connected he is to the sort of like original storylines, too, the more freedom he has. Rian Johnson could be very good.
Yeah, I feel like he suffered a bit from first off expectation going after JJ with a sure. massively successful
sure.
movie,
sure,
and also trying to fit in as the middle part of a trilogy.
Yes, yes.
I think that's a tougher job than most people.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of
JJ should have done all 3, really. JJ shouldn't have walked away.
Or at least they should have had him actively there and working on all 3.
And he wasn't. They weren't.
Even if he wasn't the director.
They barely spoke about it, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is odd, really. But there was also speculation, this was a rumour at Collider Jedi Council, that all the movies, the Game of Thrones movies and Rian Johnson's, are all going to be interconnected somehow. Now, I don't see that at all.
I mean, other than the fact that they're all in the same universe, I don't really want a Star Wars universe, per se.
I don't need the
like
movies to be
MCU
super...
kind of connected level.
No, I don't need them to be that level of connected, you know?
I'd like Easter eggs.
Mm.
I'd like kind of nods and hints to the audience that we know they're all in the same universe, but...
Sure.
Like, I'd love them to be set 100 years apart.
Me too.
Wherever they are, I'd love them to be set, like, 100 years apart.
Or more.
Or more. But have, like, talking about a legend of 100, 200 years ago, and it's the movie that we saw.
You know, in the Dark Horse comics, they went, like, 2,000 years in the future.
Exactly. There's thousands of years of recorded stories that people have written about.
Yeah. How about this? I'm going to bring this in now. Jimmy Terzis brought this up on his show. Kathleen Kennedy, here's a quote from her. We don't have any material to draw from in regards to Star Wars material. And people are going, what about the years and years of extended universe that you could pick and choose from like Kevin Feige does from Marvel?
Yeah.
Like there's books upon books upon books, comics upon comics. Like, anyway, I just thought that was an outrageous insult.
I mean, it's just another comment from Kathleen Kennedy, which... forces people to just question why the fuck she's there.
Doesn't seem to get it at all, does she?
No.
She doesn't seem to get it. Like,
but what annoys me more is she doesn't seem to want to get it.
Oh, no.
Like, we've had other people that clearly don't understand the fandom.
Yeah.
But at least they try to start understanding it. They start reading the books. They start reading the comics.
She's very tone deaf.
And she just seems to be years in and still just avoiding it.
Like, how can you say that? Like, I mean, if anything, there's way too much material, so you pick and choose, love. Like, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You're not a slave to the material. You're like a Kevin Feige. You just pick and choose a little bit of this and sample this and cross that. It's not that hard. Like, anyway. Yeah, so the Avatar sequels have been pushed back as well. This is from Disney. Avatar 2, which was going to come out in December 2021, is now coming out in December 2021 instead of December 2020. Avatar 3 is scheduled for 2023 and Avatar 4, 2025. I mean, I am fascinated to see what the reaction to Avatar 2 is going to be when it eventually hits cinemas.
I'm kind of wondering what this whole new twist technology kind of thing is going to be. Because,
well, I mean,
originally, honestly, it feels like 50% of those ticket sales came from the fact that it was a brand new technology.
That was a huge part of it, yeah.
But I feel like it would have been a $1 billion movie.
Yeah, probably.
And at the time, very, very impressive.
Yeah.
But it's not...
Oh, the technology aspect was a huge part of...
But the tech is how it got past $2 billion.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And I don't know if they've got that level of ingenuity in them. Like, to bring out to cinemas.
I
mean,
I don't understand.
Cinemas are pushing 4DX right now.
A suburban cinema, you know what I'm saying? Not James Cameron private fucking cinema at home. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, cinemas are pushing this 4D experience now where the chairs move and you get sense.
Don't even how stupid that is.
It feels like one of those Disneyland rides is what it feels like.
Yes, I was in one in Singapore on the Transformers. It was fun for 10 minutes. You know what I mean? It was a 10-minute ride. I wouldn't want to be in it for 2.5 hours.
No.
Yeah, and please don't spray me with water. Please don't do that. Because it's just not entertaining to me. I don't need that.
But, like, that to me is kind of the next biggest change that they could feasibly make in the confines of a cinema.
But what, you're going to a war movie and you're getting shot and feeling it and stuff? Like, where does it
end? The seat kind of vibrates every time a bullet comes flying.
To me, that is real, like, trailer trash kind of, like, just lame.
It feels gimmicky.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to last. But
I don't think that's where James Cameron's going, though.
No, but I don't understand, like, can he make, I don't know, glasses free 3D? Doesn't work.
I would,
with a cinema of people.
I don't know. Like, the thing with him is, he is a genius, but, like, you're also pushing against what's going to be available in, like, your local suburban cinema. What are they going to offer? Because I don't want to go and buy a $400 pair of 3D glasses to watch James Cameron Avatar. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to be outlaying serious cash. And I believe him that he can do it, the technology, but making it economical for people on a mass level, I'm not sure about that.
I don't know. Like, when Avatar was coming out, we kind of knew that 3D was coming.
Sure.
We'd had 3D glasses for decades before that, with, like, those magazines.
And there was a big push for 3D films. The bubble was burst on 3D films. Like, it was big for about 3 or 4 years. Like, Alice in Wonderland drew huge box office on its 3D.
Yeah.
You know? But would you agree with me? The bubble has kind of burst on 3D. You don't
absolutely. Most people try and avoid it now.
I don't like it at all.
Unless it is a movie that's made for 3D.
Yeah.
I try to avoid it.
I always, other than Avatar, I always felt it was incredibly overrated. Avatar was the one time where I was like, this is good, you know?
But movies like the Marvel movies have all come out in 3D.
Sure.
Well, nearly all.
I've seen one of them in 3D. I think I saw one of the Thors. I'm not sure which Thor, but maybe the first Thor I think I saw in 3D.
Yeah, and I'm kind of underwhelmed by it.
I was very underwhelmed.
Because none of the films are made for 3D.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know, like, James Cameron, maybe he makes this a whole new level of cinema-going experience, but I just...
He'll be bringing something to the table, but I don't think it's going to quite be the landmark sort of, like, thing that Avatar was, you know, where he really pushed
it. Well, in that case, if he wants to meet expectations, it needs to be a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, well...
Like, regardless of the tech, I think it needs to be a phenomenal
Concentrate on the story, James. You've done it before and turned into genius, so, like, you know...
Yeah.
Look... I'll go see it for sure, but I am fascinated to see, because I don't think there's a lot of positive hype on Avatar at all. For a movie that's still number one, even if it's only number one for another week, that was so far ahead of the pack, I think it's got a low fan base. I think it might have almost been better to have been a one and done. You know, but James Cameron's obsessed with going back and milking the franchise and earning billions more. I Honestly, and I'm a James Cameron fan, like, hugely, I question its longevity as a franchise, really.
Oh, I'm amazed that they're putting 4 or 5 movies into development when really they should be putting Avatar 2 in.
Don't forget he's filming them back-to-back as well. So, like, he's filming stuff that he's then cutting down.
Honestly, they should be putting number 2 through.
Yeah.
And then seeing how that goes. Using that to test the waters and then putting through a trilogy.
What's he been doing for 10 years? It feels like he's been making these for 10 years. Like, he's been at this for a long time.
Yeah, he has.
Like, really, honestly. Like, look, James Cameron's a creative genius. Like, don't get me wrong, he is. But and that intrigues me, but I just question a mass audience. I don't think that Avatar's got...
I don't think Avatar's as popular as it was.
No, definitely not.
And I think if they released one movie, they'd quickly see that it's going to do decent numbers, but not nowhere near the $2.7 billion that the last one did.
And it's got to be costly. It's got to cost a fortune, whatever he's done already.
Oh, they're saying that the price is huge. Like, I mean, maybe that is why they're doing 4 movies.
Yeah, to kind of just...
They're kind of spreading the cost over 4 different films, which will help profitability.
And maybe they're hoping that it... Well, I'm sure they are hoping that it really does connect and that it... Wow, people are like, wow, actually, it's a really good movie this time, not just tech. You know, it could happen, like...
I don't know. I just feel a lot of studios now are saying to themselves, well, with the success of the MCU, let's just make a bunch of connected films now.
Sure.
And they're just putting out 3 films that are all linked together so closely.
But so many of them have felt like... I like the Alien franchise, but I don't really think Prometheus and Covenant were that necessary.
Oh, no. Or really that good.
No, yeah. Not, like, they were okay. You know what I mean? Like, they were okay. Had some decent moments. But, like, it didn't really... Like, yeah, you kept the franchise going, but I don't think you really enriched it very much.
No, honestly, you could fill in the kind of background to the mythology in a single scene in any movie. Well,
what about The Predator? I mean, The Predator, I think, did the opposite of enhancing. I think the last Predator movie actually drove the value of the franchise down.
Oh, it did. Massively, like, so.
Really? And I'm a hardcore... Flop. You and I are pretty hardcore original Predator fans. And it was
it's
like,
a great movie.
Yeah, and I was like, I was that underwhelmed by that movie. You know what I mean?
Both those franchises have been going downhill.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think Alien vs. Predator was kind of the first nail.
Oh, for sure.
Alien vs. Predator came out and it was fun enough as a movie.
Saw it in the cinemas, it was very fun.
And you're kind of like, yeah, sure, that's like a...
It was popcorn.
A B-, I'll watch it, I'll enjoy it once, but I'm not buying the DVD or Blu-ray.
No.
Then 2 came out, which was terrible.
Yeah, Requiem was bad.
Requiem came out, which was bad.
Prometheus and Alien Covenant are both better movies than either of those, but they're not very... I don't know, they're not very memorable.
You know? No, they're certainly not recommended viewing,
like,
either.
You go, they're kind of interesting if you're really into the Alien franchise, but they're not that interesting either.
If you're really into the Alien franchise, you're better off going back and watching Aliens.
Watch Aliens. And if you really must, watch Alien 3, which has some good moments. But I didn't even find Alien 4 Resurrection. I've never made it through Alien 4 Resurrection. I've always found it very dull.
I don't know. I feel like... Go back and watch the first 2 Alien and Predator movies.
Yes, yes.
And you'll have a good time.
Shout out to Predator 2, an underrated classic.
But stop after those 2.
No, I agree.
Like, watch those 4 films, 2 Aliens, 2 Predators, and then stop.
Though, I feel, like, just in my heart of hearts, I feel that I reckon there's more legs in the Predator franchise than Aliens. I reckon someone could do another good Predator movie. Whereas I don't know.
I feel the other way around.
Do you think Aliens have got more potential?
I actually think Alien has more potential.
But Ridley Scott's obsessed with that, and he's directed the last 2. Like, so Ridley Scott's the guy who directed Alien.
To be honest, I don't think Ridley's the person for it.
Right. Okay, well, it's his baby. It was almost the guy who did District 9. Remember him? Was it Neil Blomkamp?
Neil Blomkamp, yeah.
He was about to start filming, and he got...
See, cut. I'd actually quite like his take on it.
I've
loved... Almost all of his films.
But Ridley overruled it completely. Like, he just really kind of moved him aside. And in fairness to Ridley Scott, he's had a lot of hits, but I didn't find Prometheus or Covenant that...
But see, for me, make Alien a proper horror film.
Like the original.
Like the original. Like, go full-on horror, where he's focused more on the sci-fi aspect of them.
And the lore, you know, the very boring lore.
Which is a trope when you come to sci-fi.
Yeah. But dude,
and kind of high fantasy kind of stuff, and I understand it.
The engineers, I didn't need to know all that information.
No, it's like putting the architects in the Matrix.
Yeah,
it's a
so fucking boring. Like,
it's a character who's built because exposition, and there's no other reason.
I'll say this: as a kid, I didn't even know there were engineers in Alien One. I people going the engineers. I'm like, where? I'm like, oh, it's in one scene. Like, if you fucking blink, you miss it. And
yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of people like me had no idea there were engineers in Alien 1. You know? It really is blink and you miss it, that scene.
But see, for me, did you see Life? Came out a few years ago, Ryan Reynolds.
No. Any good? Oh, the one that people thought was a Venom movie. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually the Venom movie we should have had.
Yeah.
That kind of film, but with Alien.
Okay.
Is fantastic.
Yeah, I heard that was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it's really not a bad film at all.
I wouldn't mind going back to watch it.
Yeah, it's quite good.
There was a lot of speculation that it was actually a Venom movie that just didn't have a title and was going to be a review.
Well, because it came out around the same time that the kind of sequel to M. Night Shyamalan's the Secret sequel.
Right.
When he brought out Split.
Oh, okay.
And everyone, you watched it, and then at the end, you kind of got that reveal that it's an Unbreakable sequel.
Right.
And it was a Secret sequel.
I see. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Life comes out. And you're kind of looking at it going, is this a prequel to Alien? Is this a sequel to...
Did we review on the show the last M. Night Shyamalan movie? The one... What's it, Glass?
Glass.
I thought it was very, very ordinary.
It came and went.
Yeah, we watched it like a few weeks ago, and I was like, this is very, very mediocre.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for all the hype, like...
The only truly positive review I've had is a guy who says, admittedly, I would like pretty much anything M. Night Shyamalan has done so far.
Well, then you've got a lot of shit to like.
And I'm like, yeah, that says a lot.
So, yeah, you like The Village then, and The Secret in the Lake, whatever it was called, Lady in the Water.
Well, yeah, well,
terrible movie.
Fucking Last Airbender, which is...
Never even watched it.
Yeah, good.
So he said he liked it.
Well, he said, yeah, he enjoyed Glass, but caveat... I've enjoyed all of those movies. And I'm like, well, if...
It was like a 5 out of 10 or a 5.5. Like, it was just mediocre and just flat.
Yeah.
It was just...
It disappeared very quickly.
Yeah. No. And considering all the heat he had on him from... Split was really good.
Yeah,
from Split, yeah.
Yeah.
There were moments in Glass where you thought this could go somewhere, but they just didn't sort of explode off the screen or anything. It was very poor. Now, we had a couple of trailers. It, Part 2 trailer... This was chilling for me.
The first half was just a full-on scene from It.
It was basically a scene, wasn't it, really?
Just a whole scene, and then they started throwing a few clips at the end. But
it was good, though.
It was really good.
How about when she goes, my father joined the circus in Derry, and I was like, ooh. Because that's where the clown comes from, wasn't it, originally? Like, I don't quite understand what happened, but, like...
Oh, okay. So, aliens, like, crash-landed on Earth.
Really?
Yeah, they're alien.
Oh.
Shapeshifters.
Oh.
And they kind of landed on or in the circus. They saw the clowns. That's why he's got the image of the clown.
I see.
And then they kind of adopted that circusy vibe because they could lure in kids and feed on them.
Really?
Yeah.
That wasn't spelled out in the movie.
Yeah.
In the first movie.
Yeah. You may have missed it. It was
really?
Towards the end, like last.
They mentioned aliens. I remember you said to me something about aliens, and I was like, really? But I didn't pick up I'm not that sort of... I thought it was more demonic.
I think it's always kind of a...
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't read the book.
I've read about half of it. I haven't read all of it. Wow, really?
I think the kind of vibe they were going for was, if aliens came to Earth, they kind of... That's where we get the myths about demons from, kind of.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, like that, I don't know. But yeah, it's another shape-shifting kind of species.
They're mean aliens.
Yeah, they feed on humans.
They're terrible aliens. Okay.
I don't know, it looked fucking cool, though. This new trailer was creepy as shit.
It was creepy, and...
Jessica Chastain looked incredible as well. Like,
very good.
I'm such a fan of her acting.
Oh, she's good. She's
good. And then you've got, like, James McAvoy in here. Mm. It's a really good cast.
All-star cast. Look, I'll see it in cinemas again. I watched the original movie with a friend, Dion, who, by the way, wants to come on the show and do a full show with us in a few weeks. And I said, mate, if you want to come along with your fucking little microphone, do it. I said, but be aware you're in the signal and fucking no holds barred. you know.
Oh no, we're coming for it. That's how it goes.
Well, don't worry, I'm sure the little guy will be blazing as well. Like, with his very limited knowledge as well. I told him what the structure of the show is. I said, you'll be fine with the news, and then I'll give you a couple of books to read, and I'll keep it very short for you because you're an infant who can't really read properly. And, you know, so, like, I don't want to overtax his brain, you know.
A little Dion.
Yeah, poor little Dion. Shout out to Dion.
But, look, it chapter two, it made me want to watch it.
Oh, 100%.
Like, as a trailer, it works.
Now, let me ask you on Stephen King, because I'm reading a Stephen King book at the moment that I've just started. It's the Salem's Lot.
Okay,
which they're making into a movie. And I just intrigued me because it's his second novel. I've read quite a few of his novels when I was growing up, and I don't mind it, actually. I actually quite like, especially early Stephen King. And so I sat down reading Salem's Lot. It's not a bad read so far. But I made it about halfway through it when I was like a teenager, and just the sheer length of it kind of, same as The Stand, I kind of got lost in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, like, because he overwrites, you know. But Salem's Lot's a bit shorter. But where are you on Stephen King as a writer? Have you read many of his books?
I've read a couple. Mm. I feel like creatively he is a genius.
Sure, concept-wise.
Concept-wise.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fan of his writing style.
Mm. I said before, he's very flabby.
Yeah. You know. See, I don't think he's a great writer, but I think he's an incredible creative outlet. Like, the stuff that he comes up with.
Yeah. I also appreciate his work ethic. I honestly do. Like, as a writer myself, his work ethic is impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's prolific how much content he's produced. Yeah.
But you're right, his concepts can be very, very strong. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not a fan of his writing. Like, if I was going to pick a top writer,
sure, he's not in it.
I wouldn't be picking his books as my favourite.
No. Okay. Yeah, but especially some of his early stuff, like Christine, very good book about the possessed car.
Yeah.
Wow, I read that as a teenager, and I was like, it blew me away. And actually, you know, Cujo, like, they're good books, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so definitely It Part 2. Are you in cinemas for this, Drew?
Yeah.
I'm definitely in cinemas for this one.
Yeah, no, It Chapter 2, definitely.
Then we had the Watchmen teaser trailer. Stuart?
Yeah, the HBO series.
Yeah, HBO series. I made a comment to Michelle, because I like to lock things in, you know me, Stu, very transactional. I said to her, okay, Watchmen, it's going to be a couple show, Michelle, and she agreed. And then I said, well, watch the movie before, because Michelle's not going to be reading the comic anytime soon. We'll watch the movie before the show just to get a recap, because I think it's like 20 years later.
Yeah, something like that.
Now, what do you make of this trailer, Stu? Because it confused me. What's going on, actually? I was very confused by this trailer.
If you haven't read Watchmen...
I have.
And if you haven't, like, been in love with the first movie...
Okay.
Or watched it several times...
Sure.
I don't think this trailer works at all. I think you're going to be lost, confused, and turned off this show.
I would agree. I didn't think it was a very strong trailer, concept-wise. It didn't make a lot...
Because I think we have a whole bunch of new faces,
sure,
even if they are familiar characters.
Yeah.
Because we don't see anything familiar. We don't see any flashbacks or costumes or anything like that.
There's allusions to Rorschach. That's about it.
Rorschach is the only identifiable kind of image.
Yes.
But it's not Rorschach that we're seeing.
No, it's kind of like his little army, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, it's kind of like Disciples of Rorschach.
What I'm confused, why were the policemen wearing them? Why was everyone seem to be wearing a Rorschach mask?
Well, yeah, they kind of alluded to the idea that this almost a church of Rorschach had just taken over.
I see.
And they'd slowly infiltrated everywhere.
And it wasn't now they're just at the end.
Yeah. But I don't know. This trailer didn't do it for me.
I'm still down for the show. I'm going to watch the show. I mean, if the show's terrible after 5 episodes, I'll stop watching, you know?
Like, there's heavy references to Doomsday Clock. Like, they're ticking and they're talking about the end of the world. Like, it's really obviously a Doomsday Clock.
Do they ever send that back, Stu? We've had this conversation before, but I forgot your answer. Do they ever go, we're less close to nuclear Armageddon? Has it ever
Yes.
happened?
Yes.
Oh, it has. Okay, right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been this high before, but it was right, like, Cold War kind
Cold War, Reagan times kind of thing.
Yeah, and then after the Bay of Pigs and that kind of
right.
was over,
yeah.
then that dropped back.
Okay.
Is it a high way? Yes, it's really quite high.
Yeah.
Mostly because of Syria? America's relationship with
China.
Russia,
okay.
China, and Korea.
Okay.
I mean, fair. North Korea is kind of the wild card here.
Yeah, sure. And, but, I mean, they have a, yeah, again, an antagonistic relationship to Russia and
the time. It's just that you look at the countries with the most nuclear power.
Sure.
And they are not known strong allies.
Would like the China trade war impact on that as well, the China-American trade war?
At the moment, it's just a trade war.
Sure.
There's absolutely no, you know...
overt militaristic
yes. tension.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it goes badly enough...
Yes, yeah.
It's certainly a factor that could lead to something.
Would Trump push it up as well, just his presence?
See, Trump has done a lot of... he talks a big deal.
Sure.
But then when push comes to shove, he's often backed down.
Yeah, it was just a question.
I think a lot of other world leaders now are kind of... after a few years, they've adapted to his style of politics.
Oh, people forget... the blood on Clinton's and Obama's hands regarding drones is enormous, you know? Like...
I think you're hard-pressed to find a world leader from any major country.
I was just about to say that. Go through lists of premiers and presidents from all the major countries. Like, the list is
I think they've all probably got something that they regret doing. And
or don't regret, you know? Just the public doesn't know about because it's not widely publicised. You know?
Well, yeah, but I think in general, when you're looking at the loss of human life, I think that's a regret for everybody.
Sure.
And I think, you're really hard-pressed to find a world leader from any major country that hasn't got some kind of blood on their hands.
Oh, totally agreed. Totally agreed. But no, that was just interesting. But look, I didn't think it was, I'll be honest, and I'm a Watchmen aficionado, I love Watchmen, didn't think it was a particularly good trailer for a new show.
I think it's a terrible trailer. Yeah. I'm still interested to see the show because I enjoyed the IP and I understand it.
Yeah.
But we were fans before the trailer came out.
Yes. I am interested by Jeremy Irons as Ozymandias. I think that's great casting. Don Johnson was in the trailer. This was my brainwave, Stu. I thought he could be a surprise pick as the comedian.
Could be, but if it's 20 years after the comedian died...
well, it's just like Dr. Manhattan. Could have plucked him out of time.
I mean, that's what I said. I kind of said it could be Dr. Manhattan himself.
You said that? Yeah, doesn't Dr. Manhattan have the ability just to create life?
I mean, he's got every ability, doesn't
he? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I really hope they bring the comedian into this show because he's my favourite character by a long way in Watchmen. I find it fascinating.
I don't know. I feel like this story is... I don't know. It's not comedian-centric. Like, it's going to be a long way from him, so...
I don't know, man. But, there's going to be a lot of shit going on, dude. Everyone's going to have their own story. Like, how long can you go with Night Owl before you just start yawning?
Remember, this is only one season so far. They're telling a distinct story. So
dude, I'm down for it, man. To be fair, I'm down for it. I'm going to put it on and...
put it this way. If the show runs for 5 or 6 seasons, eventually they'll get to a place where it makes sense to either do a flashback or bring him in from another place or...
have you ever read Azzarello's Comedian, which he did before Watchmen?
No.
Actually thinking about doing it on the show soon. It's actually, to be honest, as a comedian, Pat, very enjoyable.
Well, I mean, put it this way. We need to figure out when we're doing Watchmen, because that's a must-do for the show.
We'll do it shortly before the...
and with the HBO show coming out...
we'll do it shortly before it starts.
There's a lot of Watchmen.
We could do it over 2 weeks, if you like, because it's so big.
Well, there's a lot of Watchmen to read. We can space it out a bit.
Space it out, because there's 12 issues.
Yeah,
and
it's fantastic.
They're very thick, you know, dense 12-issue read, you know. That's interesting stuff, Stu. So, what about this, Stu? This rumour broke out and swept the internet like wildfire around the time of Spider-Man trailer. Rumours that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 features Beta Ray Bill. Now, I know he's a favourite of yours, Stu.
Interestingly enough, Beta Ray Bill has been in 2 movies so far in the MCU. He's been cut both times.
Oh, I thought he was in the... you said he was in the... like, in Thor Ragnarok on...
there are Easter eggs. There's a... his figurehead is on a giant statue.
Oh, it's just his figurehead. Statue. Okay, right.
Yeah, so when they're kind of flying in around the city, you see a giant statue to him. He's one of the past champions.
And what movies was he cut out of?
But he was cut from that movie. He was actually in the fighting pits with Thor and Korg.
Why would they cut him?
I don't know. They just made a decision that...
just too big a character to waste?
I think so. I think they were worried they didn't want to make him a throwaway Easter egg.
I understand that. To be honest,
they wanted to save him until they can do it justice.
But Beta Ray Bill, you want him in a big Thor story where he's not just a sort of off-screen death kind of thing. You don't want an Admiral Ackbar happening to Beta Ray Bill, you know?
No, exactly right. And that's what they were kind of worried about. Yeah.
What was the other one?
I believe it was a Guardian. Guardians 2, maybe?
So you think Guardians 2. Some truth to this Guardians 3 rumour? Wouldn't surprise me.
Well, look, I mean, they're still looking at as Guardians of the Galaxy, yes. So yes. It's the perfect place to combine weird space creatures with Thor,
yeah.
And Beta Ray Bill is that, so... Yeah. I don't know, this could be the perfect place for him.
I'd really like to see it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, he's an alien who just happens to look like a bit of a horse or whatever he is.
Yeah, so and picture, like, Thor's body, but the head is that of a... basically a golden horse.
And he was just so worthy, though, that Odin made him a hammer, yeah?
He beat Thor in...
Oh, a fight.
A fight without Mjolnir.
Gotcha.
They kind of with a, just, you know, fist fight.
Fist fight, yeah.
And he got to the end and chose not to kill Thor.
I see, right.
And Odin kind of said, well, you've earned my respect. You are worthy. So he made...
This is Walter Simonson Thor, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got all the trades of that. Never read it.
So he made Beta Ray Bill his own hammer.
He's a fucking cool character. I like him.
Yeah.
A lot.
Called Stormbreaker. So
Stormbreaker is the hammer, yeah?
Yeah.
You don't see much of him in Marvel, do you? He's really strange that they don't use him that much.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit of a side character.
I know, I just like him. I think he's cool. Like, you know.
Yeah, but it's the same as like a Throg kind of character. Where it's a
yeah.
Thor offshoot character that you see occasionally.
Sure.
Everyone's a fan.
Has Jason Aaron used him? Imagine like to me something that Jason Aaron would have used in his run at some point.
I don't remember. I think there was a reference, but I don't remember seeing.
Well, I'd really like to see him get his time to shine in the movies. I remember he was in. Was he in Planet Hulk, the animated cartoon? Doesn't Battery Bill come through?
Yeah.
At one point, comes through like a portal or something?
Yeah, yeah. He's in. I mean, that's why they put him in Ragnarok.
Yeah, that was fucking cool.
Because he's in the comic books
yeah.
for Planet
Hulk. Oh, I was talking about the animated movie. You seen the animated movie? He comes through...
Yeah, but, like, he's in the comic books.
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't even remember. God, I've got a bad memory. Really, in Planet Hulk, he's in it.
Yeah.
Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
I don't remember him at all.
Same as, like, Silver Surfer.
Yeah, Silver
and
Surfer...
And they more or less just took them out.
What happened to Beta Ray Bill in Planet Hulk? Did he just get beaten or something?
No, he doesn't get beaten. He's out of there before.
Okay, all right.
Shit goes down.
Okay, I've just forgotten that. I remember the Silver Surfer. I actually got to be honest. I thought Planet Hulk was an exceptionally good read as a comic. Like that's actually one of my ones in this time we've done shows. That's one of my favorite ones that I had really no. I came into not having read a single page, you know?
Yeah, see, for me, it's just got one of the greatest kind of fantasy stories.
Yeah. It's the concept and the execution.
And it's the concept place. And, yeah. And the fact they haven't gone back to that well over and over again and just let it dry.
Now, interestingly enough, the guy who wrote that was Greg Pak, right?
Yeah, now, who's been doing a bunch of comics recently that we've been reading.
Yeah, and now Superman and Hulk writers, including Greg Pak, sat down at a recent podcast and came to the conclusion, I want to get your idea on this, Drew, that Hulk could beat Superman in a fight. Now, this is normally a playground discussion that some of the signal wouldn't really get into, but, I mean, I look at it almost metaphorically. What does it say about us as readers if Superman's now losing to Hulk in fist fights? Like, Superman could move planets back in the day.
Well, yeah, but Hulk can move planets as well.
Can Hulk move planets, though?
Hulk has shattered planets with his fists.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't aware that he was that powerful.
The other thing is, and the ultimate argument against what you're saying, is that Superman, in the comics at least,
sure.
would never choose to kill someone.
Yeah, I wanted to...
And ultimately, that's the issue. If he wanted to...
Hulk would, wouldn't he?
Hulk would and has.
And has, yeah, multiple times.
If Superman wanted to, fly into space, use his lasers, and just kill anyone he wants.
Sure.
Like, Superman has the potential to win pretty much any
fight.
Most
fights, yeah. But
pretty
he doesn't,
much anything.
He doesn't play that way, does he?
No. He's the ultimate, you know, good guy.
He wants to knock you out, not kill you, basically.
Exactly. And that is incredibly hard to do with a character... who just gets stronger the angrier he gets.
Okay, yeah, all right. So,
and in comic books, has no limit.
All right, because I was just kind of like, we all know that Superman in the 80s with John Byrne, they deliberately humanized him, they depowered him, they, you know, they did a lot of things to Superman.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was overpowered.
He was very, very powerful. Like, as a kid, like a little kid, early 80s, you looked up to Superman. I looked up to Superman, he was almost like a god. You know what
I mean? He was.
Like,
he was.
He was like a dad, but also a god. You know
I mean,
what I mean?
They had to introduce, you know, that he's weak to magic as well. Because it was just, he was too powerful.
Yeah. Kryptonite, you were like, okay, weak to magic, you're like, I was like, really? Like, this feels like weak to lettuce. You know, like,
like they almost had to go, we've got to get something else because we've run out of ways to introduce a green rock.
Yeah, interesting. I've never been, like, honestly, I find, like, there are good Superman stories, there are, but I find him hard, like, week after week. I just couldn't do it. Like, it's just something about Superman that I just...
Yeah, I feel it's the same with something like Captain America as well.
Yeah, but I've read more Captain America that I've liked than Supes. Supes, funnily enough, I've always found is a very much of a soap opera. Like, there's just, it's very got like a lot of soap opera trappings to when you start reading Superman. I've tried a few times to read month to month, read action. There's a lot going on that's just very soap opera addict, like Lois, Jimmy, like the newsroom. Like, a lot of it's not Superman. Like, it's just.
Well, I think the problem is because he is so powerful. The only time they can really introduce a villain that matches him is in, like, massive Justice League-style events.
Which is where I'm more familiar with him.
Exactly right. It's very hard to introduce a monthly villain that's requires all of Superman's strength. So you kind of got to focus on the human side, the soap opera side.
Yeah, true. No, I've always, like, as a writer, I've always thought he'd be one of the most challenging to write. I've always
thought. And I think that's why they had to go through that depowering phase. And
yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, he is easier to write for now.
Yeah, and you know, and look, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I've read Superman, I've enjoyed, but I've often read him in conjunction with Batman or in Justice League. I'm more comfortable.
Oh, same. I'd say about 70% of the Superman I've read has been team ups,
and I like him. Don't get me wrong. I Superman. I instinctively like him. It's just like week after week, I'd find a tough solo. Is what I'm trying to say. You know.
Oh yeah, I couldn't read. Like, the amount of Wolverine I can read in one sitting is far greater than the amount of Superman I can read in one sitting.
Now, what about this? Now, I want to get to this whole story because there's a few angles to the story. Charlize Theron revealed, we all know I love her, that she turned down the role of playing Wonder Woman's mother in the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah,
she said, this is a great example of how Hollywood slaps you in the face when you start aging. And she thought that when the conversation... She thought the conversation when it started was they wanted her for Wonder Woman, then she found out it was to be the mother. And this person,
which is pretty fair, when she's at the same time playing the lead villain in the Fast and Furious movies, and like she's a lead actress.
Oh, and she's a beauty as well,
and like currently a lead actress. Yeah. So I mean, when she gets offered a role in Wonder Woman, I completely understand why she thought.
But what about this though? Because it became an aging thing, like. But people made it, like, plenty of people made this point, and I don't blame Charlize Theron, because I don't expect Charlize Theron to be over the Wonder Woman details, okay? Wonder Woman, the Amazons, don't really age past their fighting prime, especially Hippolyta. She doesn't.
No.
She stood in as Wonder Woman many times.
Yeah, but I feel like that's something you would only know if you're
she doesn't
reasonably hardcore
and
comic
she's
book
not, and she does not, and so it's not a comment on
and
her.
And I think the general public certainly wouldn't know that, even after watching Wonder Woman.
But I tell you who should know it when they're running the story, and that's the media outlets that were running the story. There's no research being shown. They ran with this outrage storyline or pick up all this heat, all these people jumping on.
What do you think they should have researched it?
A simple bit of research would have revealed that Wonder Woman's mother does not age. Wonder Woman's mother looks roughly the same as Wonder Woman. Like she's slightly older.
That's not the story. The story is that Charlize turned it down because she felt that it was Hollywood aging her out.
Yeah, but there's more to the story, though. The story isn't you're not playing an Aunt May like a crone figure. You're playing a character that would look very similar to Wonder Woman. Like, Charlize Theron is beautiful. Like, she's one of the most beautiful working actresses out there. Like, she's a true beauty. And it's not a comment on her, who I understand wouldn't know that, but these media outlets that ran with it, and they were pumping it up on BuzzFeed, like, to get all this outrage going. And people, all these Wonder Woman fans, a lot of women are going, Hippolyta doesn't age. Hippolyta's about 30. You know? Like, and, you know, it was getting absolutely no play. It just, again, for me, Stuart, another example of the media driving a narrative with little, for their own purpose, with little regard for facts. And that's it. You know, that's where I stand. I mean, what's happened to research? It has just gone the way of the dinosaurs.
I don't know. I'm not getting this.
Oh, well, it's just, I use it as an example. It's nothing about Charlize Theron, who I love. It's just another example that the media, they drive these outrage storylines for clickbait. We've said it before, and a simple bit of research would have shown the actual facts of the matter with the character that she was being cast as, that it wasn't an ageist casting decision.
No, but that's not the story.
But that is a huge part of the story. And plenty of people online, Wonder Woman fans, were harping on BuzzFeed saying this, like, check your facts, check your facts. Like, where is the research gone? Why are we so content now to have these puff pieces just thrown out there with like a tiny bit of research would have shown? That's all I'm saying.
I'm entirely confused by what.
I just felt like, yeah, I get the surface level story. We all understand that, and I understand Charlie Soren's position completely. Like, Hollywood is ageist, yes, we all agree. But in this casting decision, casting her as Hippolyta, if she actually been Hippolyta, would have been a fantastic casting move because she looks incredible, Charlize Theron. Would you agree?
Like, yeah, but that's visually. Not, again, that's not the story. That's not the question here.
Well, to me, we're missing a segment of the story. And plenty of Wonder Woman fans were saying this, male and female. Plenty of female Wonder Woman fans were saying this on the article, in the comment section, like, check your facts. Check your facts. Like, please do some fact-checking. And the BuzzFeeds out there aren't doing it, man. And we're getting these stories that are just... fucking, they're just clickbait, dude, and it
pisses me off. Of course they're clickbait. They're meant to be clickbait. Everyone now is aware that they are clickbait.
I know.
If you're going to BuzzFeed and expecting serious journalism, you are the idiot here.
But where
if anyone goes to BuzzFeed expecting journalism,
understood.
They are the people that need to do their research.
True, okay.
Because honestly, BuzzFeed is there purely to sell 5 minutes of your time.
Sure.
That's what they're there to sell.
They're there for and I get what you're saying, they're there for the, like, you sort of between.
So what they've done is they've said Charlize turned down a role because she felt she was being aged out.
Yeah.
So that is enough for a story.
Sure.
And the fact that we can now...
But we used to do more research than that, though. But papers would have done more research, like that back in the day.
If it was printed, yes, because you've got a limited amount of print space that you get per day in a paper.
Okay.
So the value of it was much higher.
Yeah.
Whereas now there is unlimited space on the internet. If they can pump out 100 articles in a day,
yeah,
they will do that. You get more clicks.
Good point. Good, very good point. Dane Lamont was saying from Punisher Body Count, he's been on the show as we know, he was saying, I think briefly, he or a friend of his worked at one of those outlets for a while, and apparently it was soul-destroying.
They just want you to pump out articles.
You just have to do, like, just to find anything. Like,
exactly. They don't care what it is. Quality is never an issue. Sure. They want quantity.
Good point. Good point, Stu.
But the other thing is, everyone now has seen Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And the fact that people still don't understand that they don't age...
Sure.
That's probably a problem with the film, right?
Well, I mean...
Put it this way,
Who played her mother in the end?
Robin Wright.
Okay. Who's an older actress? She's probably...
Slightly 60. Older.
She's probably about 60, I'd say.
Like, I don't think she's that old. Early 50s.
Sean Penn's ex-wife. Is it the woman I'm thinking of? Let's have a look. Let's Google. This is a new segment that I'm doing. I was doing it on the solo show, a lot more kind of investigative research during the show.
I mean, it's impressive that you're doing some level of journalism, as small as it is.
Thanks. Was that a compliment or an insult? It's very hard to tell with Stu. Like, I was like...
That's the point, Dave. The point.
I'm like, thanks, I guess. But guess what? Dave's having problems with his fucking... My bloody Mac working properly, so I have to go back to my phone. So what's your guess, Stu? I'm saying she's 58. What's your
one? I'll go younger. I think she's probably...
Well, give us a number, Stu.
I would say 51, 52, something like that, like early 50s, okay. Maybe.
Well, my phone doesn't want to play nice, so can you look? I'm just getting up in here.
Just problem after problem.
I'm saying... Oh, here we go. Here we go. It's coming. Oh, she's looking pretty young.
53. She's 53.
53. Okay, all right. So she's not 60, like I said.
So she's 10 years older than Charlize Theron.
Sure.
But
very beautiful woman. You know.
I mean, look, the article was literally that Charlize thought she was getting aged out.
Sure.
And
you think she was, though? Charlize Theron's kind of like... I don't know, that's interesting. It's an interesting comment. I mean,
put it this way. If you were hired to play someone's father and you're only 10 years older than them...
Sure.
It does say something about Hollywood.
I'd take the money, though, in a heartbeat.
Well, you would. You've got...
It's not going to really worry me.
But this is Charlize Theron.
Hugo Weaving's going to refuse, isn't he? Mr. High and Mighty is what you're saying. You know?
Well, but Charlize Theron's got options. She's got other films that she could be doing.
Sure, yeah.
Where she's the lead actress or...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the movie that came out this week where she's the lead actress in a rom-com with Seth Rogen.
Oh, yeah, actually, I wouldn't mind catching
it. Like, that came out...
If you're catching it on streaming, I'll be catching it on, but...
Put it this way.
The Long Shot or something it's called, isn't it?
The Long Shot, yeah. The studio just threw it behind Endgame and went, yep, no one's going to see that, but...
I'll watch it on the couch. You know what I'm saying? Like, Seth Rogen and Charlize... I love Charlize Theron. I think she's fantastic. Was she in The Road? She was the wife in The Road who, like, runs out, like, at the start of The Road?
I don't remember.
Oh, gee, that's a depressing fucking movie. Wow. Is that how it's all going to end up? I often ask myself that question. If it ends up like that, I mean, geez, Xbox Live's not looking too good in that one.
Fucked. But, I mean, I don't know. This,
right. Well, I've had my rant, so I'm happy.
The other thing is, it's BuzzFeed. Yeah. Like, honestly, the biggest story is anyone that's writing check your facts on BuzzFeed
well,
has got issues.
Well, you know, hey, I was one of those people. So, you know,
you've got issues.
Last week, Stu, rants were like a mile a minute.
Put it this way, if you were going to a reputable newspaper...
What's reputable in that? What's reputable? I find print journalism has sunk to lows too. Very, very low lows.
Yeah, but I think they've actually got journalists working there.
Sure. But they're understaffed, you know.
And they are understaffed, yeah. But I feel like if you're reading an article in an actual newspaper and you're still saying, check your facts,
yeah,
that's a very valid argument.
Okay, but that happens all the time now too.
But when you're reading a BuzzFeed or the comments on a YouTube page but and you're saying, check your facts.
Go look at some of the reporting on some of the events in normal papers. It's terrible as well. Like the editor, like one of Michelle's cousins points out editorial mistakes all the time. It's, I think, part of his job. And it's just ridiculous, kind of some of the errors that have been made. They're underfunded now too, like because of what's happened in the print industry. Like, you know, they're understaffed, like sports journalism and stuff. There's far less people covering and stuff like that, so there's a lot more.
Yeah, know. Because there's 1,000 other BuzzFeed articles that cover the same shit.
Hey, and there's the Signal man, so they're probably feeling that heat as well.
Well, yeah, we're oppressively taking out journalists, left, right and centre.
Stuart, Throne Talk. And we've got two episodes to cover because you were sick last week. And I did my own Throne Talk. I don't know if you listened, but, yeah, I mean, some might say it was a bit light on detail. I had to describe that battle. I got into the sort of strategy of it all. Like, comments like, I'm no, you know, Civil War reenactment specialist, but I felt that, like, it was a very poorly planned battle, which is supported by various people on the internet. And people who know a lot more about military strategy than me, that have played a lot more Rome Total War than me, were saying that it was, I thought, an appallingly planned battle from the forces of good. And an absolute waste of Dothraki, my favourites. And I was still concerned about how many of them are left.
I mean, there's basically none.
No, there are some. They were mentioned in the next episode. She said, what's left of the Dothraki? Someone said that to her.
Well, yeah, we saw like three of them come riding back. So,
well, that was an appalling.
Assume none. Assume none.
Okay, so where do you want to go with this, Stu? Because you've got two episodes to tackle here.
I mean, look, let's start with this battle at Winterfell. Which was an incredible visual spectacle. This whole battle.
I thought it was incredibly poor, too dark. Michelle made the comment, is there something wrong with that TV? People all around the world were making
Everyone was saying it's too dark.
It was too dark. I'm saying,
turn the brightness up on your TV.
No, here's my response. I don't want to have to fuck around with brightness on my TV when I'm watching a fucking show. What a fucking joke. Like, no. To the cinematographer who said turn the brightness up, I say no, make the fucking thing. Movies have been shot at night for a million years and I can see what's happening because people know how to light their sets and stuff. This was appalling. I was watching at times going, Michelle's going, what's happening? And I'm like, I don't know. It's dark. It's very dark.
Look, it was slightly too dark. No one's arguing that point. People aren't just yelling random words into a microphone, but... But it was meant to be dark and confusing because that is the kind of theme that they were going for that episode. No one knew what was happening. No one knew how it was going to end. No one knew how big the army was. Like, it's a whole...
The undead army?
Yeah.
I knew because I've seen previous episodes. It's fucking massive.
Well, I mean, people have said it's 100,000 big. People have said it's 150,000, 200,000 big. We don't know.
Okay.
And the idea was it's meant to seem like an endless flow of undead.
Sure. Unbeatable, basically.
Yeah. And it's meant to be this kind of endless night that is the darkest moment for Westeros.
Mm.
And I think they did capture that. It went too dark. I turned the brightness up 2 notches on my TV and I was fine.
I wish you'd been hit because I couldn't be bothered.
It takes all of about 3 seconds.
I just have a thing about that. I hate doing stuff like that.
Yeah, I really didn't care.
all right, that aside, because I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, all show I was going, is Jamie dead? And I thought Jamie went down about 3 times, but he was still battling.
Yeah, and Sam looked like he was down at one point.
I don't have the love affair that you probably have with Sam. I think Sam is fucking good to go. He's served his story purpose. Get him out of there.
Well, he is gone now. He's okay. They basically wrote him out of the story at this point.
His storyline was getting a little...
He's apparently just heading back to Summer Hill and just going to live out the rest of his days in the giant fucking castle that he now has. Because he's Lord of the Tarleys now.
Okay.
But look, there's a lot of fans that have very mixed reactions because of the lore and because of the...
Take us to their problems, Stu. Because I've watched all these episodes now. I'm now an expert. So
you're an expert.
Take us through it, Stu.
The reason they're having problems is because Arya killed the Night King.
Loved it. I've always liked assassins in fantasy, always played an elf assassin in D&D. Loved that an assassin did it. She's been one of my favourite characters, her storyline, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The problem is just that in all the prophecies and the lore and all the reading, they kind of keep telling you Azor Ahai, the Chosen One, and with a flaming sword.
Is she the Chosen One? He's, whatever you just said.
Azor Ahai.
His question to you is, Stu, is Arya, whatever you just said, Azor Ahai?
Yeah.
And I said, maybe. Is that going to answer your question, Tommy? But, like, what's your response to his question?
Put it this way. She doesn't fulfill any of the prophecies.
Really? Not even killing the Night King? Isn't that part of the prophecy?
Well, no. Killing the Night King is the result of being Azor Ahai in the prophecy.
Uh-huh.
Like, once the Chosen One comes back...
But are the prophecies necessarily true? I mean...
Well, that's what we're all kind of questioning now.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's been built up over 5 books.
Right.
Like, they made a big deal about this whole...
Yeah. In classic fantasy kind of thing. Style. Classic fantasy trope.
Built and then we don't know whether it's Dan and Dave who decided it will be Arya.
Rather than John, which was, you know, the other
people. Rather than John or Jamie or...
Sure.
There's a few characters that we can kind of twist the lore to fit.
They
that's the kind of...
shown they've got... Like, even as someone who's coming halfway through... Arya Stark's storyline with the assassins was very interesting. They have put a lot of time into building that story in the show, at least.
They have, like, not nearly as much as the books, but it's a very truncated training session.
Like me, I've sort of picked up on it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Through the episodes.
Yeah. But the lore doesn't fit her at all, whereas it could have fit Jaime Lannister, it could have fit Jon Snow.
Okay.
It could have fit a few of the kind of main characters.
It was a cool scene, though, I thought. Really cool.
Oh, yeah, it was very...
Very, cool. Very enjoyable scene. I tell you what, I said this on the solo show. The one segment I would have taken out and edited out was the scene where the woman, you know, the blood witch, whatever her name is...
Yeah, Melisandre.
When she looked in and locked eyes with Arya, I just thought that was a dead giveaway, that was going to be it. And even when I was watching it, I thought, that looks to me like... I didn't feel they needed that foreshadowing. I thought we could have done without that scene and it would have been more shocking because I wasn't that surprised.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that there was a nice callback to their first meeting.
Right.
When she said, like, you're going to close many eyes. Blue eyes was one of the things she mentioned. Okay. And at that point, you're kind of like, okay, shit. Like, she's closing the blue eyes, not just some.
Got to say, good character arc for that character, though. Like, fans of that character like me, I was pretty satisfied with that.
Arya or Melisandre?
Arya.
Oh, yeah.
I've always liked that character.
Arya's always a fan favourite.
Yeah.
Like, her, Tyrion and Jon Snow are always kind of the...
Yeah.
And Jaime Lannister. Those kind of four...
They're my favourites.
...are always the fan favourites.
Okay. I just thought it was rewarding. I mean, Jon Snow's had a lot of highlights. It was nice to give her a highlight, you know?
Oh, sure. I always thought she'd be the one to kill Cersei, not the Night King.
She still might.
And she still might. Like, that's still very much on the cards, yeah. But...
Or her brother might.
It could be... Yeah, those are the kind of two obvious...
Yeah.
People that are going to do it, right? It's either going to be Jaime or Arya, really.
Yeah. Especially, I think Jaime's a big chance. Could be Daenerys in, like, a sort of death battle, you know?
It could. I don't know if Daenerys is going to survive, though.
Yeah, I've got it. I guess we can move into before we move into the next episode. I really like Daenerys, and I hate to be this guy, because I am critical of other people who do this a lot. I'm a little critical of the choices they're making with Daenerys. I don't like that they're going to try to turn her into the Mad Queen. I'm a bit disappointed by that. I think she'd be one of the best characters of the show.
You know? I don't think they're turning her into... she's always had those tendencies. Through every season...
Yeah, true.
There's been moments where she's full-on rage and fury, and that's part of being a Targaryen.
Yeah, okay.
Like, fire and fury is their kind of house sigil. Like, that's...
Do you think they'll do that, though? Like, I think she'll die. I mean,
Just kind of set up this wedge between her and Jon Snow now.
Yeah.
They've set up this idea that those two aren't... There's no way now for them to live happily ever after together.
Because they're not going to be together.
Exactly. They've just kind of...
Yeah.
They've intentionally twisted that relationship now to one where it's likely they're going to have to fight at some stage.
What did you think of people online who were saying that dragon could easily have gone around the boats and destroyed them?
Drogon, the surviving dragon.
Yeah. A lot of people were saying that that was like a mistake. He sort of gave up way too easily. But I was like, she's down to a last dragon.
Yeah, I don't know. I was pretty happy with the way that...
What
I was completely surprised when Rhaegal got skewered and killed.
Yeah, that was a
That was a shock. And
that was a shocking scene. And they had did it in a climactic triumphant moment too, which is a good trick.
Yeah, it was very good. I really enjoyed that. When you, as soon as you see Dragonstone in the distance, you're like, okay, they're home, they're safe, and then bang.
Yeah.
That was really well done. And the scene with the boats ambushing them was really well done.
It was well done.
I mean, we all had Missandei written off the episode before. We all thought she was going to die in the crypts.
Sure.
And all of a sudden she survives somehow.
That was a tough ending for her. And I know people are upset. Look, I have my favourites too. Like, I always liked the guy who got beaten by the mountain. You know, the guy from Dawn. The guy who's now...
The Viper.
The guy who's now in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, Martell. Yeah,
that was always he was a favourite of Mike. And when he died, so sometimes your favourites die in this show. You just have to sort of take it, like it's just part of the show. To me,
well, Missandei and Grey Worm, they got together. They were saying we're going to go to Narth at the end of all of this, and you're like, okay, well, one of them's definitely going to die.
It's not going to end well.
No, and it came an episode later than I expected, but it came.
Part of me, though, I do like Daenerys being so pissed off about them. I'm kind of a bit like that, too. Like, Cersei, you're playing literally with fire. Like, you're going to cop it. Like,
I don't know. Like, she's equipped that city with all those upgraded scorpions. She's equipped all of the Navy fleet with upgraded scorpions.
Yeah, she's been very...
Drogon has been almost neutered by these giant crossbows.
Yeah. No, she has put up an effective defence.
Absolutely.
And the army has been hammered. Do you think there's any possibility of Cersei winning this? And literally being the queen at the end?
No. No, absolutely not. I think
she's the villain who's set up for a final fall at the very end.
Yeah, and they have set her up as the villain as well.
Yeah, successful.
Which I don't know if I like or not.
I love the character. You know she's one of my favourite characters.
Yeah, but whether she should be the ultimate villain of this series...
Well, who else is there? The Night King's dead.
Well, the Night King was... Yeah. The books are called the Song of Ice and Fire.
So you feel that maybe they should have kept that storyline going, which most people
I often feel that what they've done is swapped the two story around of importance.
Gotcha.
Cersei is a far bigger character because of the TV show than she is in the books.
Really?
And it's because of the popularity of Lena Headey is an incredible actress.
She's excellent.
And, like, it's been done exceptionally well.
People like me are hooked into that storyline. But who haven't read the
book? And Cersei is an incredibly imposing character in the books, but less of a massively impactful character than the Night King.
Yeah.
Because we kind of understand where she's coming from.
Yeah.
We can understand her.
Do you ever get inside the Night King's head in the books?
No. And that's why I think, for me, that makes a better villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't know why he was coming.
Yeah.
Like, they made it out in the show that he was there to try to kill Bran, but...
But in the show, they showed how they got created. But the green people did it, accidentally.
Yeah, the Children of the Forest tried to make this species as a weapon, and it backfired massively.
Yeah. That was an interesting scene.
But the idea that now, what's the motivation for these... Like, why are the White Walkers coming south to kill everyone? Why...
They just hate life.
Yeah, is that really a...
Well, they just hate life, man.
They seem to have a purpose. Like, they're making spirals out of everything.
Well, it's all
over now. That was never explained.
It's all over now. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like they kind of left a lot of things untouched.
I think they did, basically.
Like, why were they spiralizing children in the temples and killing everybody, nailing body parts?
To make it a cool scene for the TV?
Yeah, like, no one just goes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a little Banksy with body parts.
Yeah. No, but they very much made it very clear that when she killed the Night King, that killed that storyline.
Pretty much. And they've now just all but forgotten everything that happened, and they're just focusing 100% on going south and getting Cersei.
Not rebuilding your forces, which I thought Sansa Stark made a good point.
She made a very good point.
Yeah, like, don't just right after the... Like, you're going down on Cersei, who's dug in, fortified, plenty of mercenaries at her disposal...
Well, she's got the Golden Company now. She's got the Greyjoy Navy.
And as someone who reads a lot about...
As well as the Lannister Army, which really hasn't had
exactly.
a hammering since Robb Stark was around.
And don't forget, as someone who has read a lot of the Crusades, these cities could last years under siege. You know what I mean? It's not like in modern day
And they've said that. Like, they've said that in the show. They're able to survive throughout winters.
It was quite common in the Crusades for cities to survive and sieges to be broken after years.
Yeah.
And the so-called invading forces are retreating and losing. Like, that was part of medieval warfare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no. So, interesting, though. Dude, I got to be honest, I'll be sad to see it go. I've enjoyed these. Although I have my nitpicks over certain choices, and I'm sort of sad that Daenerys seems to be heading down a road that will result in her death, I have enjoyed this series, like, so far, this season.
Oh, yeah. And, look, I think this next episode, episode 5, is going to be the episode.
Right.
Dan and Dave originally said that between seasons 7 and 8...
Right.
So last season and this season...
Uh-huh.
They had written 3 oh-shit moments.
Okay. So one of them was clearly Arya Stark killing the Night King.
No.
No?
Arya Stark killing the Night King was not an oh-shit moment.
Okay.
Because that, they said, we were leading up to it.
Sure.
It was meant to be, you kind of got a feeling it was coming at the beginning of the episode.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, you're kind of there and you go, okay, yeah, everything makes sense.
Did part of you feel that, even though I loved the scene, I just felt that the Night King and his lieutenants deserved a better battle scene? I thought, you know.
Yeah, it felt a little underwhelming. That's what a lot of fans are kind of.
Yeah, I just felt that could have been stretched out a bit more. As opposed to just fighting the mindless, like, you know, ghouls, whatever they called the raids, you know.
But I mean, that was always going to be the plan of attack when you're facing an army like that.
Yeah.
Like, we knew from the beginning of last season, when you take out the king, everyone else is going to die.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And when you're up against an unlimited army.
Yes.
That's the only play you've got.
Yeah, I just thought the battle was a bit underwhelming, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, Dan and Dave said there's 3 oh-shit moments.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was Hodor. Hodor's death scene, hold the door.
I thought it was a terrible moment.
I think you're an idiot. I think that's one of the greatest scenes of the show to date. Easily the best scene.
Heaps of people hate that scene.
I hate it because it made them feel terrible.
Okay.
It was a complete surprise. It took everyone out.
It was a surprise.
And it was incredibly done.
I heard a lot of criticism on that.
No, not at all.
Really? I did. I heard a lot of criticism. On Collider, they were very critical at that moment. But the choices, that how he got the name and stuff, I thought it was terrible. I thought it was actually amateur hour, but...
No, that was in the opposite.
All right, so that's one of them. So what's the others?
Jon Snow's parents getting revealed in the Tower and Dawn.
Isn't this all last season?
That's what I said.
Oh,
between
okay.
season 7 and 8, there were 3 oh shit moments that they wrote.
Okay.
One was his name being Aegon Targaryen.
Yeah, that's a big moment.
That kind of being revealed.
Because it's on my family tree on the wall now.
It is now, yeah.
I was actually studying it the other day. I was like, oh, look at all these dots connecting. Ooh.
And they said the third one is coming in episode 5.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, look, I've really enjoyed it, man, to be honest. Like, I'm hooked. And here's a comment from me. I think I'm going to go back and read the books. It's going to take me years. I've got to read the Stephen King book first. But, hey, look, I've read 3 chapters of book 1. I'm off to a flyer.
I wish I could be impressed by such a low effort. You're rewatching Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
The original. Charlton Heston, Chuck Heston.
I don't know. At least go back and watch the whole show. Because you haven't even seen the whole show.
Yeah, actually, I'm more likely to watch the whole show.
That's your first.
All right, actually, that's what I prefer, actually, to be honest, mate. Like,
just at least watch the show.
Well, yeah, I've got it all there, ready to roll. I quite like the show, too. And there's been a bit of sex this series, too, which has been nice. You know, that's always been something that I've kind of quite nice about Game of Thrones.
A little bit. I mean, Arya's getting some. That's...
You're not exactly the greatest of all time. She really... That's not exactly why I'm turning up, mate. Like,
it's about the only sex we've had this season.
Okay, there was a moment where he was having a threesome with all the hookers and stuff. Like, there's little bits and pieces.
Oh, for about 2 seconds.
I could have been more, Stu. Don't get me wrong.
About 2 seconds. Then he finds out one of them's got the pox.
Yeah, that was a bit of a turn off. What have you got to say about the coffee cup, Stu? The coffee cup scandal. Have you heard about this?
What coffee cup scandal?
Oh, you know. See, how am I more over the details of Game of Thrones than you?
I'm not reading BuzzFeed. I'm watching the show.
Well, I am reading BuzzFeed. And a big scandal broke out because in the most recent episode, you know how they had the basically the big drinking session and stuff was a fair portion of the episode.
Yeah.
In one of the scenes, a Starbucks coffee cup's on the table. When, like, literally a modern Starbucks coffee cup had made it to the table and made it through all the edits and everything, was picked up by people while the show was screening. It caused a huge kerfuffle on the internet. It's been all these memes and stuff have been going on.
In that, look, if it made it in.
It did.
To that scene.
Yes.
It made it there because they wanted it.
Well, okay. But it still made it. It was just funny. It was a big thing.
Put it this way, Dan and Dave are also in that scene.
Okay.
Well, like they're both standing there in plain view.
I don't know, man. It was just funny. I thought you might have had some hilarious comments because it was a big thing that caught a hole online that I caught wind of. I was part of the hype.
They put a bunch of writers.
Michelle mentioned it to me. Michelle came home and mentioned it to me. Of all people.
That scene was filled with writers, directors. Like it was a.
Oh, was it really?
It was an Easter egg scene. That's the whole point of it. I think.
Okay.
I think they intentionally put a Starbucks coffee cup in there. So
this is a bit of a joke.
Yeah,
why not? I mean, well, I thought it was funny. I mean, to me, it's funny. It's
I don't know.
The end of the world.
Controversy. I don't know.
Not really controversy. It was more of a hilarious meme that kind of broke the internet for 5 seconds. You know, and you know me, I'm on the pulse.
I mean, it ruined the episode. Clearly,
yeah. I mean, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, let's.
I forgot. It shattered all my illusions.
Yeah, let's bring BuzzFeed in on this. let's get the real journalistic take.
A hot take.
Can we ever watch Game of Thrones again?
There's only two more shows, so yeah. May as well.
Or are we boycotting Game of Thrones?
Do we know how long the next episode is going to be, Stu? You had
pretty much 90 minutes.
90 minutes two. Again.
They're full episodes.
I tell you what, it's a long haul on a Monday night when you come back from work and put it on. Has Dave got it in him? But to be honest, they've been very absorbing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've really enjoyed it. And it is cool.
And look, next episode is the battle between the North and South.
Do you think Jamie will die? I think he's dead. I think he's gone. Really. I really do.
Quite possibly. I don't know whether he's going to take out Cersei first.
Hope he does.
But he's definitely on my death list.
A death scene of the two of them together would be kind of fitting.
I think either Jon, Daenerys, or both of them are going to be killed.
Toast. I think one of them will survive, and I think Jon Snow will probably survive. But who knows, you know.
Well, the whole Beric Dondarrion death scene, where he was killed, stopping the dead from attacking Arya.
Yes.
And Melisandre kind of made it out that
that was why he was alive. At the
exactly. He'd been brought back so many times to save Arya.
I've got a question for you.
But they brought back Jon Snow.
Yes.
Why did they bring back Jon Snow?
Because he could be the rightful king.
But that's not what the Lord of Light cares about. He cares about defeating the Night King.
Like, is the Lord of Light a god?
Yeah, or a deity of some kind.
Okay, so that guy with the beard and the one eye, the Beric Dondarrion, yeah, he was being literally resurrected by her.
No, by Thoros of Myr.
Okay, because his part of the prophecy was to protect, I thought, the Chosen One.
Well, what Melisandre said was the Lord of Light kept bringing him back for a reason, okay. And it was also he could stop the dead from killing Arya.
Gotcha, which he accomplished.
Yes.
And then he finally passed away.
Yeah, so he'd been brought back, I don't know how many times, I think they were up to like 19 or 20 times.
Right. Cool character.
Just so he could be in that.
And you said he wasn't in the books. The books haven't reached him. Didn't you say that?
Sorry, no, he's in the books.
He's in the books? Okay. Yeah. Just one of my, cool character. I enjoyed that character arc, you know?
Yeah, very much so.
So you know, minor supporting character, but well done, you know? A lot of good characters in this saga, you know what I mean? It's a fantasy saga that has a lot of strong characters. Now, I would have finally, I mean, you know me, Stu, I'm not famous for being politically correct. There was a lot.
I mean, I'd say you're famous for the opposite, if anything.
There was a lot. What do you make of the whole this thing, and Jessica Chastain weighed in on it, this whole thing about how George R. R. Martin and the show treats women badly and people of colour badly. What's your comment on that? Like, she's saying Sansa Stark being part of her character arc, being the raping and all that, and then she comes out of the end, it all made me stronger. Jessica Chastain was very critical of that. But doesn't part of me, I get your point, like I hear you, but that's the medieval world. It was very, very harsh. Really?
No, you can't use that. What? That's Because this isn't medieval. It's fantasy. It's complete fantasy.
No, it's not. He's basically... He said himself...
There were no dragons in the medieval
But he said himself... George R. R. Martin has said himself many times that he based it on War of the Roses and did a fantasy take on that.
He did, but it is a fantasy take
on that. Okay, but you can still say... They're still taking medieval...
This has no historical significance. This is complete fiction.
I'm just saying back in those days, like...
Using women were treated badly in the Dark Ages.
But they were.
Yeah, but that's got no bearing on a fantasy show.
You could definitely put it in a... Look, I write fantasy. You could definitely put that in fantasy books.
He could have. But you don't have to. You are not restricted by that. You can't use that as an excuse.
But he does. So what's your comment?
Has he said that he did it because it's historically accurate? Has he said that?
I don't know if he said that.
If he hasn't said that, then no, he hasn't.
Well, I disagree. I mean, he's been criticised for that. What's your response, is my point. He's been heavily criticised for that. Has been for seasons. I'm asking for your response. I mean, you don't mind. I've got mine. What's your response?
Look, he does treat female characters badly.
Okay.
Absolutely, he does.
Do you have a problem with it? To me, I don't. People of colour is the other one as well, because they look at people of colour, such as the girl who died last episode, et cetera, and say they're treated very poorly in the books and the show.
Well, Westeros, other than Dawn,
yes,
is pretty much entirely Anglo. It's all white.
Yeah.
Dawn, you kind of get a Spanish vibe kind of thing.
Definitely. Which the show made use of with the actors they picked.
Oh, yeah. It's intentionally based on England. Like, even the geography looks like an upside-down map of England. That's where he based it from.
I was just really curious to get your comments. I mean, do you think he has a case to answer for is kind of the point I'm trying to make here, or do you feel it's a storm in a teacup?
Both. I think it's sure. clearly been overanalyzed.
It'd be interesting to get his take.
But to be honest, yes. Like, he does treat women disproportionately poorly compared to the men.
I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien gets a lot of the same criticisms.
But I would also say that in the last episode, they were very clear that Sansa didn't say it made me stronger.
Mm.
Sansa said that if I'd gone with you, I would still be the little bird.
Sure, but Jessica Chastain was very strong on that being taken as the other way. Like, she was saying, this is another example of, you know, a male writing female characters being raped and treated very poorly provide character, you know, growth, which is in her eyes wrong. It was just interesting to me. I mean,
if you look at all the female characters, it's almost entirely the story.
I mean, it's a very common trope in fiction.
I mean, you would also have to argue that, like, he's made one of the most successful female villains of all time in Cersei.
Yeah, I agree. What about Daenerys?
Well, yeah, but remember, she
got raped
in season one. Like, that's how she grew.
Sure.
With the Dothraki, and, like, she was mistreated very badly.
I don't know. As a writer myself, I sometimes feel these analyses, they appear to be deep, but they're very surface. I don't think Jessica Chastain is saying anything particularly deep. Or, you know, it's the same stuff that gets circled again and again. I find it interesting that we have the conversation, though, and that's kind of why I brought it up. I mean, you're more of a fan of the books, and he's, you know, a classic fantasy author. I mean, he follows a lot of the classic tropes, just with a slightly more adult take. You know, J.R.R. Tolkien, who I love, very much wrote from an Anglo perspective and wrote Eastern races pretty much the scum of the earth. You know, like, not all of whom were orcs. You know what I mean? Like, and that was just, and so did C.S. Lewis. And then, you know, future generations look back on that and can criticise it. You know, I don't think it bears some weight. It's interesting, you know? And people like us who've read it all, I mean, yeah, you can look at it and go, that's interesting. I always wanted to know more about it.
Put it this way, George R. R. Martin's got more of a case to answer than any of those guys. Because I think you've got to look at it in the terms of context of when it was written and also the intent.
Mm.
And I think you look at a lot of these historical works and you go, well, it's a product of its time, so you've kind of got to... Yes, it does have the same issues, but you do have to view it with a different lens.
You've got to have context.
And I think, I mean, these books were written 20 years ago, so it was, you know, that's a current issue.
These conversations were being had 20 years ago, particularly about the racial stuff. You know, I think the female sort of rights issue is kind of more of maybe the last 10 years has really hit big prominence, but the issue about race...
Well, no, it came back again. Yeah, it was big in the 50s. That was when it was...
Oh, yeah, but it cycled back around again, highly politicised, and a worthy conversation. But the stuff about race has been going on since, you know, 60s, 70s, like, analysis.
Yeah, but you could argue the same for sexism. Like, they're both... yeah. underlying issues that have been sure. present since then.
I find it interesting. I don't really... I mean, as a writer, dude, I sometimes think some of this stuff gets a little overanalyzed. You know,
I think when you're analyzing fantasy... The problem is he had a complete blank canvas.
Sure.
Like, he wasn't restricted to writing something that would fit in a certain time
period. Like historical fantasy, for example.
Yeah, like, if he went back and put in characters that exist... Or
historical fiction, sorry, is what I meant to say.
Like, let's say Genghis Khan is a character in these books. Like, sure. then you are restricted to a certain set of...
Yeah, historical fiction.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
A certain set of circumstances and portraying one race as the good guys, one race as the bad guys, and...
Or just acknowledging that the Mongols raked their way across, you know, the world, which is what they did, and killed their way across the world. That's what they did.
Like, but you've kind of got to... When he's got a completely blank canvas, and he's writing something that's fiction. There's no bearing on reality here.
But he did draw a lot from... I mean, he said himself he drew a lot from historic... So did Tolkien. I mean, Tolkien was very, very open about... He drew from... the Middle Ages, and also a lot of myth. I'm sure George R.R. Martin drew from myth as well, but he drew heavily from, he said himself, the War of the Roses, that kind of civil war in England.
True, but you could very, very easily written it in the case of, say, the Starks were white Scandinavian kind of descendants,
sure.
whereas people from King's Landing and even yeah. the Lannisters
yeah.
were more of African descent or Asian descent. Like, you could have written... Yeah. Any race, any sex into this.
I tell you a really interesting...
And he chose to make everyone basically white.
Yeah, Anglo, yeah.
So it's a choice that he did make.
Yeah, and made the other races very much the minorities. Like the people from Dawn, for example, the people... Where was the place she's from? Narn or somewhere?
Narth.
Yeah, Narth, yeah. Like, yeah, they're very much minor sort of provinces, aren't they, that aren't
part of... But, I mean, the eastern landmass is where most of the people of colour in the show come from, and they're all portrayed as slaves or slavers.
Mm.
And then the only other place is Dawn, which has more of a Spanish...
And funnily enough, I find some of... Like, just me as a... I think probably because I read so much straight YA fantasy and then sort of white fantasy, I find that eastern stuff quite sort of... alluring and quite interesting and would love to explore more. And I think it's a shame sometimes I don't bring that more into a work like this. But there's plenty of works that do that in modern fantasy. And I remember a guy wrote a story when I was a teenager, Guy Gavril K, I believe his name is, and he wrote basically an alternate version of the Crusades. Very interesting. And basically, imagine this. The Crusades, but in a fantasy land, but the same stuff happening, just sort of like skewed historical fantasy. And he played with a lot of these ideas. It was very, very interesting writing. I mean, it's just interesting. I just was really just bringing it up to get your take. I mean, that's, you know, it's part of the conversations I've hosted you, you know. Now, what about this Vision and Scarlet Witch TV show? Set in the 50s. I was very vocal last episode on my feelings, but where are you on this, Stu? Will you be watching? Because I kept saying it was Scarlet Witch and Loki, and I've been saying that for episodes, and no one corrected me, but apparently it's Vision and Scarlet Witch. On Disney Plus.
Well, Loki's got a separate TV show. Scarlet Witch and Loki are two separate TV shows.
I know, but in my head they were together. I thought it was Witch and Loki show.
No, like an odd couple kind of.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Oh, no, two separate TV shows. Scarlet Witch and Loki.
Why is the Vision and Scarlet Witch show set in the 50s? I'm confused by that.
No idea. Absolutely no idea.
It's odd, isn't it?
Like, it doesn't really make sense.
I don't know. But
how is it said?
Apparently that news broke last week.
I mean, this feels like an Elseworlds kind of...
Could be.
Alternate reality.
Chaos magic from her too, don't forget. Like, she manipulates reality, doesn't she?
In the comics, it's chaos magic, but in the MCU, it's not.
Sure.
So
it's just kind of like little... It's almost Doctor Strange-like, her powers, isn't it?
Well, I mean, her magic... Remember, it all came from the mind gem.
Right. So does she still have the power?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's still got the power.
All right, fine.
Same as Captain Marvel. Her power came from the space gem, but...
Yeah, I never knew that. That was news to me.
Tesseract. Space gem.
Space gem. Which also Loki has now. His own...
In another reality. In an alternate reality, yes.
Cool.
But remembering he had it for years in our reality as well. Yes.
Did you know... I mentioned this. Rebecca James's... Michelle's cousin, Howard the Duck, was in the final battle. Did you know that? Howard the Duck was in the final battle in Endgame. There was images.
Yeah, I was telling you, there's everyone was in.
Yeah, I didn't realize Howard the Duck was there. That's cool.
It's tough to name everyone. Like,
I'm putting out there, what about the chances of Howard the Duck appearing in a Deadpool movie? I think that'd be fucking great. Like, putting them as a bit of an odd couple in one of the Deadpool movies. potentially sparring of each other for a couple of scenes. I think that'd be fantastic. I think the scenes almost write themselves. I've seen how the Dr. Jim Fidarski doing him. Very good stuff, man. Very good stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. It's two very different levels of comedy, though. I don't...
Well, sign me up. I've seen them play off each other in the comics quite well. I don't know. I just put it out there as an idea, you know? I'm giving this one to Disney for free.
See, for me, I'd rather see Howard the Duck with someone like a Loki.
Yeah, not bad.
I think that's a...
Not bad.
That's got to be a more... I don't know. It's more intellectual comedy as opposed to...
Sure.
The slapstick, insult kind of driven comedy, which Deadpool's fantastic at.
Sure. Howard's very cynical, from what I've seen. I'm no Howard the Duck sort of aficionado, but from what I've seen, it's very much of a dry humour.
It's very dry humour. It's very satirical humour.
Yes, yes.
And Deadpool's not.
Yeah.
Deadpool's self-referential and banter, but it's not really satirical.
No.
So, I don't know. Like, yes, you could put them together.
Hmm.
It'd just be a weird kind of scene,
though. It's a weird pair. I don't know. Hey, look, I was just excited to know that he was in there, and thank you to Rebecca for noticing that. I mean, these are the eagle eyes. And, I mean, it was almost...
Because people were kind of forgetting that he's been in two movies.
Yeah, he was in that...
His post-credit scenes?
He was in the cage for one of them, and then he got out at the end.
Yeah, he was in with the Collector and Cosmo, the Wonder Dog.
Exactly.
The psychic space dog that runs nowhere.
And was he in one of them with the Watchers or something and somewhere else? What was the other scene he was in?
He was in the brothel in Guardians 2, right. Wasn't he?
Okay, I don't remember. I
think he was in that kind of...
Now,
I don't know if it's technically a brothel, but...
Well, whatever.
Space brothel, whatever it was.
A space brothel, kids.
Like, space
brothel. Not a real brothel. Gambit has been officially removed from the release schedule. Stu, do you think this will take shape in any way at Disney again with Channing Tatum attached? Or you think this is now finally we've put to bed and death... long in development.
Put it this way, they may turn around and cast Channing Tatum as Gambit in the X-Men movies.
Could happen, couldn't it?
They could absolutely do it.
But the guy's obviously keen.
Exactly right. And it's a character that would be very cool to have in the X-Men.
Yeah, in a team.
In a team.
Yeah.
Not as a solo.
Especially flying solo with so little support.
But look, I wouldn't be reading a whole heap into them cancelling it. So many movies got cancelled with this merger.
Yeah, well, they just removed it from the release schedule.
This wasn't finished, so it got scrapped.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much the only two options they had.
It never officially been started. It got very close to
production. But you look at, like, Dark Phoenix was finished. It's still coming out.
Yes.
New Mutants is the other kind of X-Men-y news. And
to April 3, 2020.
You've got a question whether we're ever going to see that.
I've got a comment, Stu. I don't think we will see it, or if we do, it'll be straight to Disney Plus. Do you not also think that Mutants is now going to be a very loaded term as Disney reboot the whole franchise? They're not going to waste New Mutants title on just like this spin-off. They're going to want to be very careful about how they introduce Mutants back into the... You know,
well, I mean, up until this point, they haven't actually been able to use the word mutant.
Yeah, but now they can.
Now they can. I feel like they're saving it for an alternate reality take.
Yeah, the proper fucking
when
X-Men.
They bring in the X-Men.
Don't forget, the New Mutants are kind of like the spin-off version. Give us the proper fucking X-Men.
Because, I mean, in the MCU, they've used the word enhanced.
Sure.
That was their kind of code word.
Yeah.
And they do have the Inhumans, and they've used them in the TV show, which flopped massively.
Really hard.
Whether or not they're ever going to try to reboot that, I don't know.
I hope not. Or if they do it down the track with Fantastic Four.
You've also got the Immortals coming up, which...
The Eternals. Me and Corey were saying neither of us have ever read an Eternals comic. I've got no interest in them whatsoever. The only Eternal that Corey brought up is Star Fox, a character I hate.
What about Thanos?
Is he an Eternal?
Yeah.
Well, okay, he's a good one. Star Fox.
He's an Eternal. He's Star Fox's brother.
Okay, Star Fox sucks. If based on the Roger Stern Avengers comics I've read, Star Fox is one of the weakest of all.
Put it this way, it's a race of beings. Thanos inherited a genetic defect called the Deviant Gene,
right?
Which is why he's purple with the chin.
I think I've got it.
But that's why he's like purple and got purple. That chin and
so big.
No, they're all kind of big, powerful as hell, kind of semi-immortal.
And they come from Titan, that's not a moon. It's a different planet or something you were saying.
Yeah, you kind of...
I know a bit of the backstory because I've read some of the Roger Stern Avengers stuff, but like...
Like so, in the comic books, it is the moon.
It is the moon.
It is the same Titan that we have in our solar system.
It's a way more fucking interesting Titan than our Titan.
I don't know. Titan's pretty interesting.
Okay. Like if you, isn't that the one where they think there might be life? It could support
it's,
life.
It's probably our best chance for life in our solar system.
That's pretty cool.
Because, you know, there's oceans of... Yeah. There's liquid oceans there.
No, I used to be fascinated by it, to be honest. I used to be quite fascinated by Titan back when I was a kid.
Absolutely. Like, it's got enough potential there.
How long is it going to take on a rocket ship to get SG with current technology to Titan? How long are we talking?
You would be talking about a few years.
Okay. I've got that in me. I'd do that. Fuck it. Dave, you can't ever come back. Fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, put it this way. It's a few. It'd be a few weeks to get to Mars.
Okay.
Which is very doable.
And a few weeks and we haven't done it yet. Allegedly. Maybe we have.
We haven't done it yet.
You like my conspiracy theory that I'm starting? Tinfoil hat style?
We're struggling because the technology to get someone there and then bring them back is tough.
I know. And isn't it like you'll get cancer when you're there as well?
Well, there's close to no ozone layer, so you're kind of getting the direct rays from the sun.
If they said to you on my trip, Stu, would you go?
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Good call.
Yeah. I'd take space in a heartbeat. Anything special.
I thought so. I like love that shit. I like that about you, Stu. Good attitude.
Signal's cancelled.
Signal's gone. You tell me, you can be replaced.
I'm going to space. That's it.
It's okay. I think that would be an honourable exit, though. You know?
Oh, yeah, getting fired into space.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I'd allow it. Well, now, okay, Marvel. I've got some comic news here. Marvel Comics 1000. There were some huge announcements from C.B. Sabowski, the editor-in-chief. Yep. Was basically saying he had this fucking comic that was going to sell 1 million copies. And it was basically an announcement of a whole stack of talent that's coming on to Marvel in August this year. And
it's a really solid list.
It is a solid list. It actually is. So Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, who also wrote Lock and Key,
yep.
And Mike Allred, who I love, is on a Marvel comic together in August.
That could be really interesting.
Oh, I love Mike Allred's art, and Joe Hill too. In fact, I was thinking we should do Lock and Key Volume 1 on the show soon, actually. It's a very strong comic. Very strong comic. Mike Allred's art. I can read his art all day long. I love his art. It's beautiful. George Perez, coming out of retirement. He only just retired to work with Al Ewing, who is, we all know is we're too hot for him. You know, let's not forget, on the Signal. So, but we will comment on Al Ewing. Always actually got a lot of time for his writing. I actually think he's quite good. The Humanoids editor-in-chief, John Cassidy, I mean, the artist, is working with Mark Waid on a title. John Cassidy,
I mean, these are all Star big names. Wars, John Cassidy and Mark Waid, brilliant stuff.
Solo projects by Walter Simonson, Eric Larson, who's the publisher over at Image, creator of Savage Dragon, and Alex Ross, who, I mean,
one of the great artists of the time.
The return of JMS for one more day with Ed McGuinness, and that is one that I'll definitely be reading.
Oh yeah,
I've got a lot. I know JMS is responsible. He wrote the issue where Spider-Man. Lost the marriage, but that was driven by editorial. He was forced to write that. He didn't actually have a hate. He was told, you have to write that. That wasn't actually his pitch at all. And his Spider-Man, I love his Spider-Man, dude. His Spider-Man run. It's one of my favourites after Roger Stern. And then we have Spider-Verse creators Phil Lord and Christopher Miller doing something. Taboo from the Black Eyed Peas with a Jeffrey Vegarage. I'm not familiar with Jeffrey Vegarage, but I do know the Black Eyed Peas. They're doing something. Brad Meltzer, Identity Crisis, working with Julian Tedesco, and Bleeding Cool have dubbed it Marvel's August Visitors. And look, I mean, it's a big play by Marvel to get some big names. Look,
there's a lot of big comic book names there. And this is enough to kind of put that casual reader into picking up a Marvel instead of a DC for that month.
For sure.
This is the kind of thing that I would love to see Marvel do more of.
And a lap Spidey reader could definitely jump onto a JMS coming back with whoever it was.
I mean, look, we haven't got what titles they're writing.
No.
We're just kind of saying that they're working together and that it's a one-off kind of thing.
I think there are even more names that have been... I follow a lot of Marvel creators on Twitter and they've all been... Like Jerry Duggan, for example, who said some... I said to him how much I enjoyed Savage Avengers last week and he came back and said, thanks for the kind words, bud. Really nice guy. And he was tweeting out names of people who are attached to this Marvel August thing.
Yeah.
So they've got a lot of good talent.
I mean, for me, this is how they can get people onto those B-list titles.
Sure.
You put someone on Spider-Man. You put someone on a massive title.
Well, one of the A list. Could definitely be doing maybe a Thor. I mean, that's what he's famous for.
Could be. He's very famous for it. But for me, it's you put these guys on a B-list title.
Really? You don't think they'll be put on all... I would have thought this is all A-list stuff.
I'd put one or two of them on the A-list.
Sure.
And then the rest on the Bs, and watch the popularity of the Bs shoot up.
I was going to say, because the Bs could definitely go to A's. It's happened before.
Exactly.
You know, it's happened before many times. I think it was really interesting. I'm very glad that news came out. It only came out in about the last 24 hours. Also, Stu, Heroes in Crisis finale has been rescheduled, will now coincide with a big Doomsday Clock reveal. May 29th, Doomsday Clock 10 is solicited to reveal the secrets behind Dr. Manhattan and his connection to the DC Universe. Adam the Computer...
So this is 10 of 12, like it's...
Yeah,
I should. It's wrapping up because it is a 12-part event, yeah. Isn't it?
I would say. I think so. Seeing it, original Watchmen was, I would say it's mirroring that. But Heroes in Crisis, it sounds to me like they're already backtracking on the Wally West thing. I think they got a lot of heat for that. I think it could be a reversal from Dr. Manhattan or something to you know, expunge.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Well, you'd be surprised. The level of heat they got on that, sometimes it seems like they pay attention. A lot of time they don't. They just go, it's a brave storytelling decision by Tom King. I think they went a bit too far.
Look, to be honest, it is. Like, it is a brave decision that they made.
Doesn't make it good, though.
No, it doesn't make it good. But I do applaud them for making those kinds of decisions.
I applaud them if they're done well, but I don't applaud them when I read the issue and it was very poor. It was terrible in the issue.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was poorly executed.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, though. You're saying sometimes...
But I'd rather see them take chances and do something out of the box.
Sure.
Than be happy sitting at a 6 to 7 out of 10 every week and just...
No, I hear you.
Running 1,000 issues of drivel out there.
I hear you, Stu. I do, and I appreciate that as well. And look, I was pretty hot that fucking... I mean, I was hot last show. I've really calmed down this show because, I tell you what, last solo show, I was hot to trot, man. The amount of shots I fired, honestly.
Doesn't surprise me.
It was like a fucking submachine gun types. You know, even when I finished, I was still searching for stories. Because did I tell you that I busted that story up with my journalism? Have you heard this?
Yeah, you sent me multiple text messages ending text messages with like hashtag journalism.
Yeah, okay.
And finally a real journalist and all this sort of stuff.
I got to the bottom of the Roger Stern fiasco.
And the whole time I was thinking, if only he'd done this tiny, tiny amount of journalism before he spent 5 minutes raving like a lunatic into a microphone.
No.
At this outrage.
Oh, I said to Michelle.
And then the week after, you finally go and research it.
I said to Michelle, a couple of my friends online, I feel like the world's greatest fucking journalist.
Yeah,
I felt like I was hunting down Watergate, actually, to be honest. I was getting close to what actually happened on the moon. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was getting...
What actually happened on the moon?
Yeah. The moon landing, Stu. Question mark.
No, not question mark.
I used to work with a guy who was convinced the moon landings were a hoax. He used to send me all these videos about the hoax, and I never used to watch them. I liked his intensity, though. He was very, very convinced the moon landings were a hoax. I don't quite understand, like, what the point of the hoax was. I get the propaganda, I guess, but other than that, like what else was there? Like, what happened at Apollo 13 then? You don't know what was Apollo 13? Just a public relations nightmare?
I mean, the fact that we can just prove it without a shadow of a doubt that it happened.
Yeah. Hey, dude. Like,
and people are still saying it's a conspiracy.
It's the internet, man. Like, you know, if you put enough theories out there, some people will catch hold.
It's like these fucking flat earthers.
It's very similar. It's very similar. Oh. I'd say it's even worse. I'd say flat earthers are even worse.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
That to me is the low point of humanity.
What's the low point?
Flat earthers. That is the lowest point of humanity
now. It's poor. There's a documentary on Netflix, apparently, that's very kind of revealing about flat earthers that I've been recommended to several times. And I haven't watched. But I've been recommended by my sister. Multiple people who follow the signal have told me to watch it. Yeah, I haven't quite found the time just yet.
No.
Still watching Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, still catching up on everything Charlton Heston ever did.
Yeah. Very, very penetrating but accurate comments.
Yeah, I like your priority list there.
All right, so Weekly Comics. We're going to kick it off with Batman and the Outsiders.
Short week this week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just three. Batman and the Outsiders. Now, I do want to say this. This is Batman and the Outsiders 1. I think Brian Hill was the writer. This Batman and the Outsiders title's due.
Yeah.
1984, the very first comic I ever got. My mother bought it for me in I still remember an airport newsagent was Batman and the Outsiders title, and Ronald Reagan was in it because it was around the time of the 1984 Olympics. And I always have a soft spot. Chuck Dixon did a good Batman and the Outsiders run. Again, I find the Batman and the Outsiders a really interesting concept, and I do have a sentimental attachment to the title. I enjoyed this issue. I thought it was a solid 7.5. It's very much a get the team together issue.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm. I think this is a scene setting. Mm. Introduced a couple of cool characters.
Signal's hard. He's I'm not a big fan of Duke Thomas Signal, but
you know. I mean they picked the weakest bat family kind of duo.
Yeah, it's a shame that his name's Signal because we're Signal of Doom. I wish we had a better fucking person because I always refer to him as a Signal. I wish we had a better representative in the bat universe and bat family than the.
We're just gonna have to kill him off, and
he's just lame. He just never does anything. He whines. That's about it. He's kind of like Robin. It's like not quite a Robin.
Yeah, but the Batman of Doom didn't really have a ring to it.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
But even still, some really nice moments. I think this was quite reliant on you reading his very recent detective run. There was a lot of comments to Karma. I didn't read it, but I know of it. I think I've read a couple of issues. Overall, very much enjoyed this issue. Had Katana, Black Lightning, and they're both of them are Batman the Outsiders staples.
Yeah, and Black Lightning was done well. Katana, for me, is always a bit of a meh character.
I liked doing this more than I've liked doing just about anything. I've never really been a big fan. We also had Cassandra Cain, who I really do like.
Yeah.
As usual, doesn't say much. It's kind of her gimmick.
Yeah, this is
mute for a long period in the comics.
Yeah, I don't know. This for me was a scene setting.
Sure.
Issue one. It did exactly what it was meant to do, but it's still a run of the mill kind of 7 out of 10 for me.
I get 7.5. I like the Bruce in The Outsiders. You see a different. This is what I like about Batman and The Outsiders. You see a different version of Bruce Wayne. He's not as dominant and as controlling because generally they're kind of his secret team. He's usually a little bit more compromised. He was slumped on the couch, the artistic style. Go check it out, people. It's a Bruce, not a defeated Bruce, but an exhausted Bruce. There was a feeling that Bruce Wayne was very exhausted and was getting his team to do stuff for him. I find that concept interesting.
I didn't read him as exhausted.
I thought visually,
he was laid back. I thought he was.
I viewed it as exhausted, and he was saying how he had all these like problems going on or whatever. And I was kind of fascinated.
It was the other way around. Black Lightning was the one who was saying he had all the problems.
Okay. Well, maybe I read it wrong, but I just saw Bruce is exhausted, which I don't normally see. I see, you know how I view Batman. Like, you know, he's like the fucking Batman. But like,
see, I saw him laying back,
relaxed,
confident.
Okay, I viewed it differently. I thought he was troubled and compromised, but you're saying just kind of laid back, just chilling, like Bob Dylan kind of stuff, just like chilling.
He was just sitting there talking to Lightning, kind of just. Trying to solving issues more than, like,
okay.
Dealing
with them. I almost saw a Bruce that was kind of like at wit's end, but I like your take.
It's interesting that we read completely different takes on Bruce.
Well, to be honest, there wasn't a lot to read into either. It was a brief scene. But regardless, I'll openly admit I have a bias towards the title because it was the first comic I ever got. And I've always enjoyed the fact that Batman walked out of the league and took his fucking bat and ball and went home and formed the Outsiders. He was pissed off with the Justice League. Over some issue, and he said, "I'm going, and you can fucking take your leave and shove it." And he created Batman and the Outsiders, and I've always been a Batman and the Outsiders fan. They're very much a second tier title.
But, yeah, I like it. I like the concept more than I like the execution, though.
Understand.
I always find half of the team, to just be underwhelming. Oh, and in this case, Signal and Katana for me, I'm just not a fan of those characters.
Oh, I wish Signal wasn't involved.
And I feel like if you'd replace those two characters with two other.
Mm.
Characters to play the same roles.
You know who I wish was there? Metamorpho, because he was in the original team. I love Metamorpho.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Replace Signal with Metamorpho would be a nice one. Yeah.
And it's funny because as a kid, I didn't like, I don't mean it's a sob story, but like when I got my comic, I didn't have a lot of other comics. And so I was obsessed with this comic. I read it back to cover many times. And I was like, Metamorpho, I kept running into him in random comics. And he's such a fucking D-lister. But he's an interesting character. Metamorpho, I think, is one of the hidden sort of like, I guess he's a Bronze Age kind of guy, Stu. Would you even say Silver Age? Like, he's an older generation kind of hero, isn't he? He's almost like the DC's thing, you know, in a lot of ways. I've always found Metamorpho a very interesting character, but you don't see a lot of him in comics these days. What did you give us, Stu? 7?
I gave it a 7.
I gave it a 7.5. Then we had Star Wars Age of the Rebellion, Boba Fett. Stu, I wasn't as hot. I thought the art in this was absolutely amazing. I actually thought the art in this comic was some of the best art I've seen in Star Wars comics ever. I didn't find the story was that great, like, but the art was really good, I thought.
I think the artwork for all of the Star Wars issues has been of the same quality. I think it's always been up there.
Quite high.
You read this next to, like, the Grand Moff Tarkin when we did... and the art very styling is very strong similar.
What do you think of the story?
This felt flat for me.
Yeah.
This was probably the worst Star Wars issue that we've read from all these Age of the Rebellion, Age of the Republic titles.
Do you think it suffered by not giving Boba Fett any interior dialogue? I thought he deserved
it. No, I actually liked that they kept him silent.
Yeah.
For 99% of this book, he didn't say a word. And I think that that fit. He was kind of this imposing character without needing to say a word.
The lone gunman kind of thing.
Yeah, and you kind of build this mythos up in your head. You're filling in the blanks for him.
Yeah.
I think that all worked.
Just the story itself let it down, though, didn't it?
For me, it was the case of he comes into town, runs into the guy, and then it's, oh, look, who's got the giant bounty? It's the guy that he ran into.
Mm.
So he backtracks, and you've got a little bit of a fight, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to see more of Boba Fett outsmarting him.
Yeah,
it was not just being basically lucky and good in a fist fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was an underwhelming issue of a great character, and I felt the art was a little wasted on a very slight story.
Yeah, see, I would have rather him gone hunting.
Mm.
Like, see him tracking someone down and properly using all of his, like, bounty hunter skills, as opposed to walking back, feeding the guy some water who told him where he was. Yeah. I don't know. It just felt like they took the easy out.
I'm only giving it a six. And saying that, I thought the art of Boba Fett was fantastic. I thought he looked great. It's the story that let this down for me.
I also gave it a six. I think it's very average.
And then we had finally, Stu, Red Sonja and Vampirella. Is that how you say her name?
Vampirella.
Meet Betty and Veronica 1. Now, Stu, big pick from me. You know I love the Archer universe. I know you're not hot on the Archer universe.
Couldn't think of more useless characters put together.
Red Sonja? That's sexist, Stu. She's one of the great characters.
This book, to me, is the perfect thing to start a fire with.
Didn't like it at all?
Not one bit. If you want to start a fire, this is by the pages, because that's kindling.
I mean, I that's a bit harsh. I mean, I quite like these Archie crossovers. I think they're quite charming, actually.
Oh, I can't think of anything worse.
Look, it's not going to win any Eisner Awards, but I personally found it quite charming. And look, I'm a Red Sonja fan. I'm not a Vampirella fan. I mean, I know of her purely the visuals.
I can tell you're not a Vampirella fan. You didn't know how to say her name.
I've literally never read an issue, but I've seen bits and pieces of her over the years in terms of a lot of big artists have worked on her. I definitely love Betty and Veronica. You know how much I love the Archer universe. I really am just a 1950s kid at heart. I'm going to give it a 7.5. I could see Stu writing this one off.
I gave it a 3.5.
It's not your cup of tea, Stu.
The artwork was passable.
I actually thought the artwork wasn't that strong. I thought the
humor was quite good. I didn't think it was that great.
What did you think about Sonja joining the team, though? I love that bit. That was my favorite part. She joined the team. I was like, yes. But Sonja's really a fucking wicked fighter, man. She can join the football team. And then you had Vampirella and Betty and Veronica being the cheerleaders. I mean, I was laughing at it. And, it was 7.5 from me. You know, I'm going to keep watching.
Yeah.
By the way, you last week, I just want to reference this, you gave Old Man Logan Berserker a 7, didn't you?
I did give it a 7, yeah.
And yet, it's funny, I gave it a 7, but I had a far more critical review. I felt the art really, really sold.
The artwork for me was phenomenal.
It was great.
And it was an ingenuitive kind of panel design.
Yes.
The way they constructed the actual book itself was clever.
It was. Did you find the story quite slight, though? I found it, the story was like not hanging on much.
The first half, where he's got the hit list and he's hunting them down, I thought that was a really cool take.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, we hit this Amadeus Cho moment where everyone's hoping that he just slices his head off and ends this charade. But we ended up getting the whole what you expected.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this isn't your past.
Almost the team up.
And from that point on, it was kind of for me, it was a pain by numbers.
Yeah, I didn't. I'll say it one more time in case anyone didn't catch the last episode. I find Jeff Lemire wildly overrated in terms of his superhero work. I know his indie work might be very strong, but him on superhero titles, I didn't think there was anything special at all.
No, but I didn't think it was bad. I just thought his work was pretty good.
Okay.
In terms of he did the character justice from what we'd seen previously with Mark Miller's work.
Yeah.
Like, it felt true to the character, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, it was Old Man Logan. I mean, he was recognisably Old Man Logan.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that he had to copy someone else's style and character and all sort of stuff, I think he did a good job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a 7's not a bad score.
And I stand by what I said. I think it's the best Wolverine we've had for years.
I mean, yeah, although I will say this on record, I think Tom Taylor's Wolverine with X-23 was far superior. I think
the X-23 run is better.
Yeah, but that was called All New Wolverine.
Yeah, but that was
still X-23.
It was X-23.
It was great, though. I thought Tom Taylor did a great job.
True, but I'm talking about a Wolverine or Logan character.
Oh, I agree with you.
This is the best we've had for years, but that doesn't make it stand out 9 out of 10.
And that's, kind of, and to be honest, since
it is very readable. It was very, like, I enjoyed reading it.
It was professionally done.
But when I put it down, I kind of went, I enjoyed that, but it's going to sit on the shelf for a while before I pick it up again.
Oh, yeah, I've already deleted my copy. Like, fuck that. Like, I'm gone. I'm not going to be reading anymore. I'm in Logan. Now that the original Logan's back.
Like, because I've bought it.
You got it through your...
I got it after I got Old Man Logan. Sure. Like the original.
You're pretty hot on the original. Like, I want to keep going.
Yeah, exactly right. So you kind of buy the second part and...
Yeah.
You know, I think if I was going to read them, I'd probably read them again back to back.
Sure.
And it is...
Don't forget Bendis did Old Man Logan in Secret Wars. Because
that's this takes place right
after... Picks up right after the Bendis the miniseries. Which I never read, actually, to be honest. But I read a lot of those Secret Wars spin-offs, but I just didn't read that one. There was just so many of them.
Yeah.
I read quite a few. Now, Stu, trade of the week this week. So what was your final score on Red Sonja and Vampirella?
Three
and a half. And I gave it a 7.5. Trade of the week this week is a big one. Punisher invades the Narm. Firstly, I want to thank Bob Fitzsimmons, who wrote in to The Signal. This is his first ever podcast that he's listening to. And he's a big Punisher fan, an older guy, he said. And look, there's no shame in that at all, Bob, in being new to the technology. I only discovered podcasts really a few years ago, shortly before we started doing the show. And I really hope you've enjoyed The Signal, and thank you so much for writing in. It's a real privilege. Now, Stu, this was a captain's call. Are you marking it down, man? Because I've already... How many have I got left now that I've used one? I've still got
some. I don't know. I don't think the system's really working, to be honest with you.
I won one on a bet.
Yeah. Being really honest with you, though, I... We're not betting and using them enough for the system to be working at all.
You use more. You know, the problem is you don't need to use them because I don't give you restrictions, whereas you gave me restrictions.
Well, I also don't try to pull these giant, terrible comics on you.
Well, okay, firstly, I want to point out, just for any Punisher fans out there, I know we have a lot of Punisher listeners and stuff. I am, we all know, a dyed-in-the-wool Punisher fan. Stu is...
I mean, you are a hardcore Punisher
fan. I'm a hardcore Punisher fan. Stu,
and I am completely the opposite. He's the opposite. I'm absolutely unfairly biased against Punisher.
And when I'm pitching Punisher, I try my hardest to pick stuff that I know is a bit different. And that's why I picked this one, because this one, just to give some context, the Narm was a comic that was very popular, very critically acclaimed comic in the late 80s, early 90s that did Vietnam, from the US perspective, week by week. And each month of the Vietnam comic was edited by Larry Hummer originally, then Don Daly took over, who was a Punisher editor. Basically, the way Larry did it was each month was a month of their tour. So 12 months was one person's tour.
Yep.
So they would cycle through the characters. Now,
although 13 months in the case of Marines.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, and I've read quite a bit of the Narm. This, in the later episodes of the Narm, later issues of the Narm, right towards the end of the cycle, they started bringing in Punisher, who's a Vietnam War veteran, famously in the comics, and were doing flashbacks of him fighting in Vietnam, which forms the basis of the early part of these stories.
Was he always Vietnam?
Yes. Yes.
So he hasn't slid back, kind of like a Tony Stark originally, like in his origin story with the whole cave.
Wasn't it Viet Cong?
Dwelling was Viet Cong, but then it kind of slid back to Afghanistan.
Oh, now Punisher has.
Punisher has slid since.
Unfortunately, since about 2001, in much more recent. But he was a Vietnam veteran even when Ennis was writing him. By the time Ennis finished with him, they kind of redid it. Rucker redid it where it was Middle East.
But I suppose my question, like, I'm not up to date on the lore for Punisher, but he was always Vietnam.
Yes, from the beginning, yeah. From his first appearance in Spider-Man, he was a Vietnam veteran. Okay. And then it was broadened out by Mike Baron and stuff.
He was always just spoke of as a veteran who then went crazy after the whole park and stuff.
Well, remember when Punisher debuted, it was like right after Vietnam. It was like 73, I think, was his debut. So Vietnam was just winding down the war.
True, but he could have been a veteran for earlier wars and then...
Yeah, but no, he was always a Vietnam veteran. And look, I mean, I have a lot to say on this one. There's There's a brutal honesty to the Nam comic, and this was a title by vets. Larry Hama was a vet, was for vets and also for young people. I find this origin of Punisher actually in Vietnam better than the Ennis, more critically acclaimed origin that's in Bourne. Ennis teased that he was turning into Punisher on his tour, but did it very much as like more like a supernatural connection, like the devil was talking to him. Where in this one, we see things like the monkey storyline with the sniper, which is where he gets the idea for the skull motif. And I liked, and you had Chuck Dixon writing issues here, and he knows his way around Punisher. Like, Chuck is so comfortable in his Punisher stories. I really, really enjoyed Punisher Invades the Nam, and the throwbacks to a Frank Castle pre the death of his family. And you're seeing a slightly different character, but still very driven by that desire. He's still got that like element of kind of like retribution in him. Where were you, Stu? Because this is why I picked it, because it wasn't... I mean, the latter half of the book, or third of the book, is a more modern Punisher fighting with his fellow Vietnam veteran.
Yeah.
But the majority of the book is Frank back in Nam. Where were you on it?
Like, I certainly enjoyed the Nam storylines more.
Mm.
For me, this... I don't recognise a lot of the jargon as being...
Sure.
I don't know whether it's a part of an MCU jargon or whether it's realistic jargon.
The Nam used realistic jargon. They actually had like slang things in their comics, referring to like what the Americans were calling bits and pieces of machinery and their foes and stuff. You know, it was a big part of the Nam comic.
Yeah, but for me, that was taken a step too far.
Sure,
it actually took me out of it because I had to reread it to go, why the hell are they calling it?
Yeah.
You know, you get the obvious military references, like they said Charlie Checkpoint or something like that, and you go, okay, yeah, totally fine.
Oh, there's a lot of it in this lingo.
But then they're consistently and seemingly five times a page calling each other hamburgers, and I'm like, I can't tell how racist that is because I've never heard of it before.
I don't think it's particularly racist. I mean, but yeah, that's just a term they're using. The little man was a term they'd use, you know, the Viet Cong.
Yeah, that I'd heard. Mm. Hamburger I'd never heard of before. Mm. So that kind of...
Mm. I think some of it was cleaned up. I think some of it was... from what I've read about...
Yeah, but I don't know. It felt like it had been edited...
Well, we know what they called them in real life.
Probably too heavily.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So it didn't feel natural. It didn't feel like what they'd actually say, consistently going, the hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, so that...
Well, you know that they called them worse. You know that. Like,
oh, absolutely, yeah. You do read it as if it's been G-rated.
Yeah, look, Larry Hama is on record. He was very... He wanted to give readers what it was like there. And he said, we have to soften some elements just due to, you know, this book has to be softened.
Yeah, so for me it's kind of a weird mix of...
Yeah.
They're going for, in some ways, hyper-realism, but then they're toning everything down to a G-rated...
Sure.
Which for me doesn't mesh.
Did you still enjoy? I find the stories were really cool. Like, I also like the way that, like, they're fighting an enemy, but the Americans are by no means whiter than white. Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the storylines are driven by military dysfunction and stuff. Like, you know, like the corrupt corporal or colonel or whatever he was, that guy that Frank was chasing around. You know, that element of corruption in the military. I dug it, man. That story about the sniper, I fucking love that story of the sniper and how he gets the skull from him. And the one where Chuck writes, where he goes in and rescues... Who is it he's rescuing? He's rescuing the POWs, yeah? From the cave. I love that storyline. And did you like the way that Punisher... This is kind of what I want to talk to you about. Did you like that Punisher... Like, Chuck writes him like there's still a need to punish. Like... He writes him very much like he's a Punisher prototype. You can see that character when he gets back to the real world, which is what they called it, like the incident with his family, which sent him over the edge. But he was already pretty close to the edge.
Yeah, that's actually what I really disliked.
You didn't like that, yeah.
I would have much rather seen a much more grey version.
Sure.
Instead of this hardline black and white.
Yeah.
Which he should have become after that incident only.
Yeah.
I felt like this was their chance to make him a really relatable character.
Sure.
And to humanize him, but give him the skill set.
Okay.
To then make the incident in the park that much more traumatic.
Uh-huh.
That you can see that it's rippled right through his psyche. It's like ripped him apart from the core.
Yeah.
Whereas instead, they show this guy who's barely, you know, cohesive at times.
Well, he's a hard case. Like,
and you get to the point where you're sort of questioning if he ever actually liked his family or if he just tolerated their existence.
I felt one of the more awkward parts of the storyline. It wasn't Chuck. It was someone, the middle writer, wrote it where Don Lomax wrote it where Chuck, so where Frank goes back to the real world, but then re-ups and changes his name to go back as a special forces guy, and he's like, Maria supported her like she always does. I just felt that was kind of like a little bit like colour in the edges, kind of like just getting back there. I thought that wasn't necessary because I felt that showed a bit of a lack of respect for his family.
See, I wanted to see a character that I could believe would fall in love.
Mm. Well, you didn't see his wife, did you? Like,
no, but you also never saw any reference to him saying, I miss home or...
Yeah. He loved the war. He loved the war, dude. He was re-upping because he was hooked on the war.
Yeah, but see, that for me is a character that's almost detached from reality.
Mm.
And at that point, I don't feel anything for him when this whole Park thing happens and he becomes the Punisher for real.
I hear you, man. Like,
you lose that humanizing element.
Mm.
And then he's just a rogue soldier his whole life.
Well, he's not rogue. He's definitely an outlier. Like, he's a sniper, and then he's a special forces guy. He's a Green Beret. You know, like he's harder than hard. But I get you. He's not a soft character at any point.
No, but he's
Castellone or Castle.
I don't know. I feel like you need to have some kind of contrast.
I hear you.
To show that this character has. Not grown per se, but changed.
No, you would have liked maybe a, like, for example, one of my favourite shows of all time is MASH. Okay, that was a take on the Korean War, but was really a comment as much on military involvement in Vietnam. In there, you saw, for example, Hawkeye. Life was a party, but then you would get another turn from him. There was another turn.
You'd get those moments where it was really
a real clarity, real character depth. Like, he was very anti-war to his very soul, but there were things he missed. But yet, one side of him was like it was just a rotating amount of women and
see, for me, if you were going to make Frank Castle truly interesting, he should, in my opinion, have been a character that was exceptionally good at what he did, but he didn't enjoy it.
Sure.
Whereas, a character that felt like he was forced into these situations because of love of country.
Sure.
Because he felt it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But he felt that he was good at it, but not enjoying it.
Yeah, the impression.
Whereas this showed a character who, like, page two, they said, we've got a mission for you. It's killing a bunch of guys, and the chance that you come back is almost zero. And he goes, yeah, let's do it. Like, I've got a wife and kids at home. Let's roll with this.
How about this line?
And you're kind of reading going, he's got nothing to live. Like, he's not.
I get you. I get your point. Like, he's already a pretty damaged unit. In a lot of ways.
Or he's already Punisher.
Yeah, no, it's...
There's almost no growth between that and post-incident.
I think some of that is Punisher was so hot at this period, as a character, and guys were writing like Chuck doing it so well that when they inserted Punisher back in an arm, they went, what are we going to do? Insert, like, a sort of more green version, or are we just going to put Punisher back there? And they went, like, three-quarters Punisher. Do you know
what I mean? For me, show him eventually, like, coming to terms with the fact that he's incredibly good at what he does, but he hates what he does.
Yeah, and he definitely doesn't in this ever have that resolution.
No, in this he revels in it. Like, he loves the fact that he's able to do this.
How about in the Death Doctor storyline? Yeah, we heard him, but I wanted more than that. I wanted to be up to my elbows in his guts. I say it's a foreshadowing of the state of mind of Frank Castle that turns him into the Punisher very shortly after his final tour of duty in Nam. And as you're saying, he almost is the Punisher. In fact, at times he's saying, I want to punish him.
He's saying all this stuff that makes you feel like there is nothing for him to live for in America. He's 100% taken up by this lifestyle that he's chosen.
I think he's hooked on, the way I look at it, he's a hard case anyway, Frank Castle, or Frank Castellone. He's just a born hard case, you know. Tough kid from Brooklyn, has it all. Very patriotic, all that. But he's just a hard charger. And they say that in this. Like, they say that in this comic several times.
Yeah, but I feel like that's almost written in there because if you just say that, then you don't have to develop a character. You can just say, yeah, he's hardline. He just really loves killing people with guns.
What about...
And that kind of overrules any kind of character development where you see him training and actively getting better.
No, I hear
you. He's always the best of the best.
It would have been an interesting storyline. I understand your point, Stu. And I haven't read this comic. I've read this comic once before, so I was coming in quite fresh. When I picked it up, I expected him to be a little younger and greener than what he got. But then again, I went, it's Frank Castle, and he always is like that. What did you think about... what I liked is they had the character of Ice.
Do we know when he met Maria and the family?
Well, it was before his first tour, I assume. So, I mean, his kids... When he came back, his kids were about... I think his oldest kid was like 9 or 10 at most, you know?
Yeah, so when he left for Nam, he had a young... Very young family,
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
And he was...
He did, I think, 4 tours. I want to say 4.
Let's say 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
Something okay. Like that. So, yeah, he... Like, that's...
He didn't have long with the family before Central Park. I think it happened in... I'm no expert on continuity, but I believe in Marvel time.
I'm just kind of trying to get a rough idea. Yeah.
I think he had, like, 6 months of happiness at the max.
But see, for me, if you're leaving your family and, like, a 2-year-old kid kind of thing...
Sure.
That should be a person at their most vulnerable.
It would have been interesting, and I guess maybe this wasn't the comic for it. It would have been interesting to have a moment with him calling home or something, I think, honestly.
Or maybe him having a pause and a second thought if he sees, like, little kids running around in a village somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, the sniper's hiding out in a village and there's kids, and he kind of pauses, and that causes someone he likes to die.
Yeah.
Like, one of his friends, and he kind of blames himself, and...
Yeah.
You can start to see that divorce from love and family in the American kind of side.
He's slightly softer. He's, in fairness to the writers, he's slightly softer than normal Punisher, but not by much. Like, slight.
I don't know. Like, I haven't read enough Punisher to see it. If it is there, it's very slight.
Then we jump forward to Big John Buscema with Chuck Dixon, the storyline where it takes place. Basically, they jump forward to a storyline in the present where Punisher goes down with the drug cartels, like, busting heads, and he gets captured. And Microchip realizes that he's in, like, a pretty much like a non-technological place. He can be of no assistance. So he calls Ice. Who was in a previous storyline, and Ice comes in to help. I mean, I thought this had some fantastic moments. It's full. I agree with you. I understand from Stu's perspective this wouldn't be your thing because this is just normal Punisher.
Yeah, this is...
This is just Punisher.
Ice feels like the worst character I've ever seen.
You don't like Ice?
What character is there? This is a...
Ice is kind of like...
This is just a one-line machine.
Ice is kind of like...
He's there to walk in there and, like, take his glasses off and do the first 2 minutes of every CSI episode.
I love Ice. I've already texted Chuck about how much I fucking love this one. Like, yeah, Ice is, slightly, and I want to say, use the word slightly softer, or at least slightly less able Frank Castle. And he's more in it for the, he's in it for the money, whereas Frank's in it, by this point, see, Frank is fully just a weapon of punishment. So
yeah.
Frank just wants to kill them all, whereas Ice is purely there for the 200K or whatever it is that Microchip promised him for rescuing Frank. But I like the scene, really powerful scene, and where Ice says, they're talking about Punisher, and he realizes that Frank Castle's Punisher. He goes, I read about this Punisher guy. I had a feeling it might be you. You always were a hard charger. And there's this picture of Frank, which I loved it. And he's just looking, he's staring into the camera, and he just goes, there's just no peace for me, Ice. And I was like, oh, this is fucking great stuff. I was lying in bed.
And that's when David Caruso takes off the sunglasses. And you get the intro to see it. Like this, this feels like all of the cheesiest, corniest lines from all of those 80s action films.
But what about this scene?
Thrown into one character.
The final scene of Heart of Stone where the Huey's flying away and Frank philosophizes about happy endings because they've rescued the girl. He goes, the girl goes back to a loving family. Ice invests his money wisely. Frank comes back to his loving wife and family. Happy endings are for suckers. And then there's just the Huey in the sunset. And I was like, I was like, man, this is some fucking wicked shit going on here. Like,
oh, really? I was rolling my eyes hard at that.
I love this kind of stuff, man. Like, to me, this is kind of like, this is the Punisher where I'm living and breathing it, man. This is kind of where I'm always take to the streets. I was actually saying to Michelle that I could almost get a van to stop being Neighbourhood Watch.
See, this is like causing lactose intolerance for me, the amount of cheese that we're ingesting in one page.
And then how about...
I'm struggling to keep
there's
up.
There's Ice in the flop house in the next issue. You're a cold man, Ice, so they tell me. He replies as he squashes a cockroach with his fingers. Frank didn't make a... There is a moment, though, all joking aside, Chuck Dixon often says himself that he writes characters, plot's his most essential part of the storyline. So Chuck focuses on plot, moves along, that's kind of, you know, thing. But there's a moment in this, and I've told him before, and I still believe that I think it's one of the finest moments of Punisher character moments that I've ever seen. It's when Ice is talking to Frank, and he's just saying to Frank Castle, like, why the hell are you so down, you know, and so obsessed? And he's just he basically thinks Frank's just a vet who's let the war get to him. Like, he's just a guy with PTSD who's just, you know, down on it. And he doesn't understand what Frank's lost. And he keeps asking Microchip. And Frank says, don't tell him. Don't ever tell him. He doesn't deserve to know. And he just walks off. And I'm like, there's some fucking wicked shit there. Like, to me, that was a character moment where I was almost like, that was almost a little personal. I was like, that's pretty intense. And maybe I'm a shallow guy, but that strikes deep depths in me, as deep as I go. I was like, that reminded me, though, no, in all honesty, that reminded me of the scene in Batgirl Year One where Batgirl swears the oath to Robin and Batman. One of my favourite moments in comics.
I don't think it has the depth of that.
Oh, but it's close. When he's just like, don't tell him, don't ever tell him. He doesn't deserve to know. Fucking throws a bomb down in that conversation and just walks off. Frank's, I like Chuck Dixon's Frank. His Frank Castle is a very dark guy. He's very bleak.
It is.
You know, I like it. I don't know. I find it powerful. I mean, I get.
I don't know. Like, this comic, for me, the second half.
Sure.
Felt like it was entirely written from one-liners. Like, they challenged themselves, can we write a comic where every single sentence is a one-line, take the sunglasses off and start the theme music kind of moment?
I don't know. Maybe I just dig that kind of style. But
I feel like, that's more what you love.
Like,
Big in that time. Like, it's very late 80s.
Yeah, late 80s, the 90s. That's when it was.
Which is when this was written. So, it fits as a popular style for the time.
I know a lot of Punisher fans out there respond to it. Like, there's a lot of guys in the chat groups and stuff, and I'd love to hear their comments on Punisher Invades the Numb. It's a challenging book in some ways because, look, the back.
But I think if you're in it, you're really in it.
Yeah.
But if you're not,
sure,
it's a struggle.
Sure.
Because if you don't immediately respond to that first issue,
sure,
you've got another four of them coming.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of reading the first one, and I'm sitting there rolling my eyes going...
Oh, you're talking about the storyline. You're talking about the storyline in the present.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, you keep going, and this isn't getting any, like, different. This is just the same kind of...
Chuck told me that John Buscema...
Ice is really cold. You're like, yeah, thanks, ice is cold. Like, meta.
I will say this. Chuck told me once when I was talking to him about the storyline that John Buscema, who is an acclaimed artist, like, for Marvel, one of the big John Buscema, one of the great artists of Marvel... Originally, this was like a one or two parter, but John Buscema loved doing the art so much for it. Like, he really dug it that Chuck broadened out the story for him. You know, which was interesting as well because John Buscema at this point.
It kind of feels like it was stretched, though. Do you not feel.
Oh, I think it was added on to. I mean, I dug it heavily, but yeah, I mean, you could tell. I like the storyline of the Revolution.
The first half is clearly far superior. Like, sure. the stuff that's set in the past.
Oh, well, that's that's,
to me, is a significant step up from the stuff set in present.
And I would say that's the heart of the book, the stuff set in Nam. The stuff at the end is kind of more the extra, you know? And, look, everyone did a good job. I think Don Lomax did a good job. Chuck did a good job with his Vietnam bits. And I think Roger Salek, his name was, did one issue or two issues. I enjoyed it. And I'll say this on record. Garth Ennis, good writer, very good writer, potentially a great writer. I prefer this version of Punisher Invades the Numb to his Born, and it's very close. His version, Stu, is more modern, I guess, and probably has a little bit more character, but it ends literally with him talking to like what seems like the devil as he's hopping on the plane to go back to the wife and kids, and the devil's kind of promising that soon he'll start punishing. I never liked that ending. I always thought that was cheesy as fucking hell. It was like a supernatural thing. It was a bit of a like, is it supernatural or is he just crazy? But it seemed like it was the devil talking to him.
Yeah. And, I don't know. See, my point of view is the whole, he's now spending the rest of his life wearing a skull on his chest because he killed one sniper who wore a skull.
Well, but he was like the ultimate sniper, though. That was, he was like the ultimate guy.
That kill means more than anything else he's ever done in his life.
I don't know.
See, for me, that feels like he wears that as war paint to mock him on the day of his killing him.
I don't know. I thought
that makes sense.
I always saw that guy as a very...
Like the symbol's meant to strike fear into the Viet Cong. I get that. Mm. But then he kind of goes home and he's like, you know what?
Places of Strength.
I'm just going to run with this for the rest of my
life. Well, the quote from his first appearance, I'm just a lonely soul. I'm a soldier fighting a lonely war. That's what he tells Spider-Man in his first appearance.
Yeah, I'm out.
I don't know. There's a scene in Big Lebowski where I think John Goodman's character goes, "The man in the black pajamas, a worthy adversary." Unlike those camel fuckers in Iraq. And I've always thought that as well. Like this storyline definitely throws that up in an interesting way. I mean, I personally find this a pretty interesting, as a Punisher fan, I find an interesting exploration of what was going on. And I should mention, the NAMM title at this point, when they brought in Frank, was very much on its last legs. So they brought in Punisher to really drive sales, you know, because Punisher was so big at the time. But the NAMM had a very highly regarded run. And this was kind of the latter days, like Larry Hammer had left the title. They'd had editorial changes and, you know, they brought in Punisher literally sort of to try to prop up a sort of failing title, I guess. I'm giving an 8. With the caveat that I think you get a lot more out of it if you're a Punisher fan.
I would agree with that.
Or a fan of the NAMM, because I think then it's interesting because you can read the NAMM issues, the early ones, and then see this later version. I'm giving it an 8. What do you give it?
I can't decide. I feel like it should get a 5.
A 5. Okay.
But I can't stomach the thought of it passing and getting a 5 out of 10. So I'm going to go 4.9.
Oh, Jesus.
4.9, and be aware that my mark is biased.
Your mark is very biased.
Look, for me, it's not something that I would ever want to pick up again.
I will. I've got it here by the table. I mean, I dig it, man.
The first two issues out of this book, I kind of read that, and yes, it was cheesy, and there's, for me, a lot of places where there could have been a lot of growth, and that kind of annoys me more than anything else.
I think you make a good point there, though. Can I say that on the record? I reckon that they could have done some bit more character work with Frank, frankly, you know?
Because I get that once he is the Punisher, it's very hard for him to grow and change dramatically as a person.
Sure.
Like, he's meant to be a character that is almost devoid of emotion.
He's never going to take up 10-pin bowling with his mates and, you know, be too happy with life.
But he's also never the kind of guy that's going to find a group of friends and care for them and not have something tragic happen to them.
Outside of Micro was his closest friend, and Garth Ennis so stupidly shot him and killed him. Like, that was so dumb.
Yeah, but, like, this was a chance for him to have friends, relationships, show humanity and have it ripped away from
him. Well, Band of Brothers style kind of thing.
Yeah, and show him, like, developing these emotional calluses and moving forward in life.
Yeah. Instead, they made him a sniper, and they made him, like, an outlier in the military. Do you know what I mean? They made him kind of like a solo agent.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas in the military is where he should have been, in a Band of Brothers, fitting in.
Yeah.
And forming these bonds to have them broken, which force him to kind of
which
adapt.
I think Ennis later did in, like, the Platoon. I haven't read it. But, I mean, I hear your point.
For me, that's just... It's more frustrating than anything else. It just feels like a missed opportunity.
Mm. Okay.
For something that would have made this a far more interesting read for someone that's not a fan of The Punisher.
Sure. No, interesting. And, I mean, I think in a later issue, later episode, we'll do the NAMM, which has got nothing to do with Frank Castle whatsoever. Like, the NAMM comics, it's extraordinarily good, you know? And very much an exploration of what the soldiers were fighting, you know, back then. It was written by Vietnam veterans and stuff and edited by one. So I've always found it a really superior title. So we'll do like an early volume of the NAMM at a later point in the show. But no, thank you for indulging me in my captain's call, Stu. I do appreciate it. It was very... When you saw Punisher and Raids and Army, you must be like, okay, Dave.
I'm looking forward to this week. Sometimes I take 1 week off and Dave just goes crazy.
Oh, I went crazy last week.
Locking in captain's calls. All shit.
I just got so excited, man, when I was just... I just looked at it and I thought, fuck, this tummy is a captain's call. You should use one.
I'm recovering. I'm slowly getting better. And then I've got to sit down in my vulnerable, weakened state. And what do you want me to read some Thor? Do you want me to read some Hulk? No.
Punisher invades the NAMM.
Punisher invades the
NAMM. It was the two goodbye, which I thought would send you over the edge.
Yeah. I was swearing a lot when I read that.
All right. So we've locked in our final scores. Stu, what are we doing next week?
Next week we're going Image. We're doing Injection.
Okay.
The first 5 issues, first story arc.
I know it's Warren Ellis. I actually don't think I've read it. I just know it's a Warren Ellis title.
Yeah, it is Warren Ellis, Image.
I think it's quite spun out, quite far out.
Yeah, high concept, sci-fi, fantasy kind of stuff.
Cool. And it's like a five-issue arc, you said.
Yeah, I haven't read it. You haven't read it.
No.
Be interesting to see what we think.
No, definitely. And I think in the future we'll definitely throw in a few more Image titles as we go along.
Yeah, we're constantly saying we'll do more Image, but you and I have both read so much Marvel and DC. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of Punisher.
That when we're kind of picking something to read, we're going with what we know.
I've got one locked in for next week in my head. I may have already set it, but I'm going to keep it hidden. You know. It's just
you're going to use another captain's call.
No, this isn't a captain's call. But Punisher and Conan are the two captain's call topics.
They definitely are.
I've
had to use a captain's call for this Red Sonja trade this week.
I'm going to tell you right now. I mean, this could change week by week. I'm very much in grim and gritty street, take it to the street style.
You're always in that mood.
And the computer was saying it was hilarious in my solo show that I would go on rants about how I preferred Time X and then start raving on about the streets.
Yeah, that's just you. That's how you wake up.
What do you think about me on Neighbourhood Watch? Driving around in a black van with my dog as my companion.
Oh, see, you would take it way too far. You'd be that guy that everyone's like, oh, Neighbourhood Watch is a good idea. And then, like, 2 weeks in, they're like, ooh, someone needs to rein Dave in because...
Urban warfare, my favourite words.
Shit's getting real out there.
Yeah. I'm cleaning the streets.
He's got, like, bought an attack dog and he's ready to go.
I'd call him Max, which just Punisher's dog. Max. Put the big collar on him.
I mean, you're wearing a Punisher hoodie, right?
Yeah, I am wearing a Punisher hoodie. But it's like in Taxi Driver when Robert De Niro's character to go, sometimes I wish a flood would come and wash away all the scum, all off the streets. And he tells that to the politician. The politician's like, that sounds great. You got my vote. I wish a scum would come and wash away all the filth.
I worry for so many.
Any final comments, Stu? Or you're all done, you're all punched out. Stu looks like he's got about 13 rounds. I'm fine, I'm flying. I could do another solo show. Is there any more Punisher?
That would actually finish me off. That would actually kill me.
Imagine if I did this, a Punisher podcast issue by issue. Could you all imagine?
I can imagine. Do you know what else? I'd have to imagine because I wouldn't listen to it.
And it'd be solo.
Oh, yeah. Hard solo. Hard solo.
Just Dave with a candle.
You might get little Dion to come on once or twice, yeah, maybe.
Oh, Dion claims he likes to play. He always says Punisher doesn't go far enough.
That's the kind of thing you say just to get on your good side. Like he's trying to lure you in and get you to do a favour for him. Exactly. He's like, oh yeah, Punisher. No, not hard enough. Love Punisher.
I'm like, okay.
By the way, Dan.
Acceptable point of view.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. As always, check out the collective. There's a lot of good members on there. And follow us on the Facebook page and at RedLantern2051 on Twitter. We should be back next week, Stu, with Injection.
Injection 1-5.
All right. Good night, kids.
See ya.